South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running for the final broadcast of August 2018. It is the front end of Labor Day weekend 2018, the official, semi-official, not, you know, astronomical, but everybody looks at it that way, end of summer. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm sure I'll be complaining about freezing my little white tuchus off in no time at all. But for now, it's toasty and beautiful outside. It's 81 degrees here in the magnificent Horn Studio at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion. And we've got a little bit of time left for Naked Radio, and by God, I'm enjoying it. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. One of the leading reasons why there's no video of this program, Bob Kincaid and Naked Radio. Heads up, there's a warning from Brother Deacon Asa that there will be food porn photographs coming during the program. I may not be able to contain myself. No, not at all. This program is brought to you by the subscribers to the Horn. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. Not quite happy 100, and a long, long way away from the fantastic 400, but you happy few who subscribe to the Horn and keep and take care of about a week's worth of fundraising every month via PayPal and via Patreon. Thank you so very, very, very much. We could not do it without you. So thank you indeed, Horn subscribers. And thanks, of course, to everybody who supports the program during the course of each and every month. What's that? Yes, I do that. I do know that, Larry. Yes. The intro montage does include the song In a Big Country by the Scottish group Big Country. All right then. It's Friday on the front porch. The usual advisory goes out. If you want to participate in Friday on the front porch, well, we will gather around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the Old Holler Tree here in about 57 minutes or so, as moderated, of course, by longtime Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable moderator, Sparky. If you'd like to join us in the chat room, come on by. You will be immediately, if you go to headon.live and you click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, you will immediately be greeted by the early arrivers, namely V.T. Blom and Squeaky. And you will be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator and Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening, this afternoon, what looks to be, must be a fabulous afternoon in Northern California, to become Man Cave. Yes. And, okay, so that's pretty much everything. Let's see, what dominated the news today? Well, the two funerals dominated the news today. The funeral of John McCain and the funeral of Aretha Franklin. It wasn't really the funeral of John McCain. It was a memorial there in the rotunda of the Capitol of the United States. you know, I couldn't help noticing that there in the rotunda of the capital of the United States, the memorial took place in front of some of the most racist paintings that this country still proudly displays, namely the baptism of Pocahontas and De Soto discovering the Mississippi River. De Soto, of course, was dead by the time his company got to the Mississippi River. But nonetheless, there he is on a charging steed, a stamping charger, with a cowering indigenous person saying, mighty Spaniard, right? Yeah. I still haven't figured out how you discover a river that's been used by people for 10,000 years, but oh well, that's the curse of knowing a little history and knowing a little anthropology and a little archaeology and a whole lot of other people not. Discovered the Mississippi. Yeah, oddly enough, there's no mural on the wall of the Capitol Rotunda of De Soto's men passing plague-level diseases to the indigenous people. That's not that. Maybe that's why the indigenous person is, like, cowering. Please don't give me smallpox, you filthy fucking Spaniard. You disease-bearing European. Please don't give us the measles. You scumbags who haven't washed since you were born. Maybe. Yeah. But anyway, that, and then, of course, in Detroit, the funeral of Aretha Franklin, which Tracy told me earlier she would not be surprised if it was still going on by the time we fired up the front porch group. But it was of the two, there was far more stirring rhetoric at Aretha Franklin's funeral than there was at John McCain's. But once again, I was impressed as John McCain's two sons, in their full dress uniforms, paid their respects there in the Capitol Rotunda, while somewhere off in New York City, a pair of Goomba wannabes, greasy-haired and grasping, who have never done anything for this country whatsoever in all of their miserable, misbegotten lives, and who would lose in a moral and ethics comparison with Uday and Qusay Hussein, namely Donald Jr. and Eric Trump, were, you know, off fucking off somewhere and grubbing over money. Because grubbing over money is what Trumps do. Did I say scumbags? Yes, I think I did. Good. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't other stuff going on today. No. And there are a couple of things that were going on today that bear note. We talked last night, and, you know, the goddess of irony just works this way. We talked last night about and I played that audio of the League of the South burning an Israeli flag and a Talmud and a copy of the Communist Manifesto and praying to God to kill all the Jews. I mean, they did that. There was a prayer in there. Well, I know we had a hard time getting through the audio. It was a little bit, it was a little bit stunning just trying to get, but we got through. And yeah, they prayed for God to kill all the Jews. Completely oblivious to the fact that the God they were praying to was the one that, you know, the ancient Hebrew people invented in the first place. Atne ute aitbre, those atzis nay. But that having been said, there's a follow-up. It's already on. You may recall that two nights ago, prayer meeting Wednesday, I think it was. Yes, it was. I opened one of the last remaining cans that I have imported northward from the deep south. I opened one of the last remaining cans of sparkling Grapeco diet soda, a southern thing for 100 years. Best grape soda ever made. And I'll probably finish it off over this coming Labor Day weekend. Oh, I should add, I've got a couple of racks of ribs, a couple of slabs, busily brining away in my proprietary herb and spice brine. They'll come out probably early tomorrow morning. Get rubbed with my own little idea of what you do to a rack of ribs, and go on the smoker sometime tomorrow. Should be mighty tasty, because also imported from down south. I have a quart jar of Liquid Wonder. No, it's not something called Liquid Wonder. I've got a quart jar of Dreamland barbecue sauce. And I usually don't slop my ribs with sauce. But in this case, no, I'll make an exception. I'll paint these ribs real good with Dreamland sauce. And they'll be fan-damn-abulous. But anyway, back to the business at hand. So yesterday we had the audio from the League of the South. And the day before that, of course, we had Ron Monkey DeSantis using a racist slur for which he refuses to apologize.
I have nothing to apologize for. I don't want Andrew Gillum to make us all socialist commies. Socialist commie monkeys.
No. Because he can't apologize. If he apologizes, he'll lose the value of the bell that he rung, the dog whistle that he blew, in hopes of bringing to his side the people you have to have if you're going to win elections as a Republican, namely skinheads, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, Russian sympathizers, you know, the usual suspects that are so magnificently portrayed there when they're signing up the rabble in that scene in Blazing Saddles. Yeah. Well, today, with all of that going beforehand, news broke via the Tallahassee Democrat. Earlier this week, news broke via the Tallahassee Democrat that there's work being done to sort of amplify and magnify the Ron DeSantis dog whistle in Florida. They apparently come from a phone number in Tallahassee with a 222 exchange. And these robocalls that have gone out are apparently kin calls, is that a word, to robocall campaigns that have taken place in Charlottesville, Virginia, in the state of Oregon, and the state of California. You may recall, and I don't know that these are the ones they're referring to, but back before the jungle primary in California, I played the audio of a robocall that was run on behalf of a neo-Nazi running for Senate as a Republican, of course, in California. It was the campaign of Patrick Little, and that robocall referred to Dianne Feinstein as a traitorous Jew. Surprised they didn't call her a Jewess. He's going to get rid of all the nation-wrecking Jews from our country, starting with Israeli citizen Dianne Feinstein. Remember that? Yeah. That was the robocall that had the clip from Schindler's List of the a character saying, "Goodbye, Jews, goodbye, Jews, goodbye, Jews." I don't know if that was the same group, but California has received calls. Oregon's received calls. They've had robocalls in Virginia, and this latest. And let me tell you now, you don't have to worry about me playing the audio of it, because the Tallahassee Democrat, which has the audio, it's a Gannett paper, the Tallahassee Democrat. the same folks that bring you USA Today. Apparently they have the audio, but they chose not to publish it because they don't want to give it any more, any more cover, any more outreach than it already has. But Jeff Berlew at the Tallahassee Democrat appears to be a pretty good reporter, and he gives us a decent rundown of what's in the call. The calls are, of course, made to Floridians in the hope of influencing the gubernatorial election and trying to defeat Democratic nominee Andrew Gillum. Let me share with you reporter Jeff Berlew's description. The automated calls are narrated by someone pretending to be Gillum and using an exaggerated minstrel dialect. I know what that dialect is. I'm not going to do it. An exaggerated minstrel dialect with jungle noises in the background. The call ends with a disclaimer that they were funded by The Road to Power, an anti-Semitic white supremacist website and podcast linked to Scott Rhodes of Sand Point, Idaho. People were upset by the calls, not surprisingly. Reporter Jeff Berlew says the Tallahassee Democrat chose not to publish the audio because of its blatantly racist and offensive content. The call came from a phone number in Tallahassee, as noted before, the 222 exchange. Meanwhile, this Rhodes character, Scott Rhodes up in Idaho, also goes by Scott Platek. No, really. Platek. And he has not yet responded to the inquiry by the Tallahassee Democrat. By the way, just to let you know what kind of an organization the Road to Power is, I mean, I've already told you they're Nazis, which means, of course, they are human scum and probably don't deserve to live, but that's just my opinion. I think Nazis were made for stomping. And so did my family. Let's remember, my father, my uncles, various cousins, distant, participated in a group exercise to kill Nazis a few decades back. This group of Nazis also have paid to put out robocalls to flog the body, the dead body of poor Molly Tibbetts out in Iowa, in promotion of their sickening white supremacist message. And no one is surprised. This is, of course, disgusting in the extreme. It's also typical, and I will add that it will work. Because I continue to maintain the position that there are more people with sympathies to this kind of filth in this country and in a place like Florida than most people in this country dare to admit. If you do, if you're in Florida and you've received one of these, let me know. I'd like to have your input on it. I'd like to know, for instance, what you might do if you met Scott Platek's cross your heart, on the street. Seems like a stern talking to is definitely in order. An exaggerated, a person impersonating Andrew Gillum using an exaggerated minstrel dialect with jungle noises in the background. Of course, I remember years and years and years ago now, when there was a senatorial election. It was the senatorial election in which Bob Corker first became a senator. And it included the voice of a white woman referring to Corker's African-American opponent, saying, "Harold, call me," with jungle drums beating in the background. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this is anything new. That's even like pre-Trump. This is something that's running around in the DNA of the Republican Party and has been running around in the DNA of the Republican Party for a very, 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 very long time. And, of course, people in Florida, decent people, are disgusted. Jeff Bergen, communications director for Gillum's campaign in Florida, said, "This is reprehensible and could only have come from someone with intentions to fuel hatred and seek publicity. Please don't give it undeserved attention." That's a good response on the part of Jeff Bergen. But again, he kind of misses the boat on this. Sure, it fuels hatred. Sure, it seeks publicity. But it also secures to the side of Ron DeSantis the necessary maggots, Nazis, neo-Nazis, etc., Klansmen, scum, League of the South types, who in a close election can be enough to make the difference to give Ron DeSantis the victory. The only answer to this is to mobilize and get out the vote. You have to pull Florida. People who want to see Andrew Gillum be governor of Florida have to pull an Alabama. And that means mobilizing on the order of 90% turnout among groups like the African-American community. And in the meantime, Ron DeSantis must be confronted with his monkey comment everywhere he shows his face in public. Make him own it like George Allen was made to own Makaka. Make him wear it like a rotting fish around his neck. So it's not just, but this is not just reprehensible and not just to fuel hatred and get publicity. Mr. Jeff Bergen, please, sir, the purpose of this is to garner votes, because there are a shit ton of these filthy, scummy, evil, nasty, disgusting racists in a state like Florida. Now, the next question, and this is a question that was asked last night in regard to the League of the South. Where's their money coming from? It takes some coin to run a robocall campaign. It takes a lot of coin to run a robocall campaign. It's all automated. There's not that much labor involved, but it's still expensive. Or else our side would be doing it. I mean, not those calls, but we'd be doing a better job of it. Maybe. Hi, I'm Ron Monkey DeSantis. You may know me from my greatest hits, like Monkey This Up. Yes, I went to Harvard and Yale, but goodness gracious, I understand that as a Republican, I need every racist I can find in order to win the election. Especially if it's close. So vote for me, Ron Monkey DeSantis. and then give the wrong goddamn date in November. Yeah. Not that we could ever afford anything like that. But that's just part of it. How about we run up to Washington, D.C. for a moment? I mean, I'm assuming that all the other liberal progressive talker types have dealt with the stuff like the off-the-record comments that Julius Geiser admitted making, you know, shitty stuff about Canada that sort of tanked the Canadian negotiations and whatnot. So we can look into the weeds at some other things. By the way, and I don't know if we'll hear from our buddy John Bridevo from Blue Dot Nation this evening or not, but God, they've been having some big-time fun with Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the guy who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Lots and lots and lots of fun. The poor little Republican goobers tried to troll Beto O'Rourke with a picture of him from his punk rock band days and got eaten alive. And then it only got worse. I ran across one graphic that just made me laugh ferociously. It's a Beto O'Rourke and gave a whole bunch of positive attributes, you know, including played on stage with Willie Nelson. And then it said, Ted Cruz eats boogers, is the Zodiac killer. Yeah, there it is, there it is. Beto O'Rourke has visited every county in Texas, campaign run without PAC money, was in a band with Cedric Bixler Zavala from At the Drive-In, the Mars Volta, played guitar with Willie Nelson, skated outside of Whataburger. Ted Cruz eats boogers, is the Zodiac killer. So now Geiser Disgusta says, I'm going to get the biggest stadium in all of Texas for my rally for Ted Cruz in October. Well, cool. That means more of it will be empty. That's a bigger echo for me. I like echoes. Maybe he can, maybe Geiser Disgusta can replay some of his greatest hits, things like Ted Cruz's wife is definitely not hot, or Ted Cruz's daddy was part of the JFK assassination. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I mean, and the crowd will eat it up with a spoon. I didn't know any. This is the beauty of having a community like ours. I hear from all over the country. Mike in Cascadia with a note. Subject line, Sandpoint Nazis. Sandpoint, Idaho, home of Scott Playtex, the Cross Your Heart Nazi. Mike points out, Sandpoint has long been a Nazi haven. Remember Richard Butler and his filthy gang of Nazis, Mike says? The rise and fall of Aryan nations of North Idaho. Ah, that neck of the woods, is it? Well, of course. So meanwhile, this weekend, big doings in or maybe not this weekend. There's a meeting coming up at the Hyatt Hotel in Crystal City, Virginia, which is sort of a suburb of D.C. And it's and the Hyatt there is within spitting distance of National Airport. The name of the person appended to the front of National Airport, I won't say, because he deserved to have an airport named for him about as much as, DeSoto deserves to have a Native American casino named for him. But anyway. The Hyatt Hotels, there's a group called Act for America. And when asked to describe themselves, they call themselves the nation's largest and most influential national security organization. Ask anybody else, and they'll go, oh, hate group. Well, not anybody else, but if you ask, say, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they go, oh, hate group. Or if you ask the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, they're like, oh, hate group. Well, it seems that Hyatt Hotels was contracted by, there's a larger point here. Hyatt Hotels was contracted by Act for America to host their sickening little Muslim hate fest, anti-Muslim hate fest, their tenth annual national conference. You can get a room at the Hyatt for the low room special room rate of $299. Whew! I guess I can't afford to be in Act for America. It must be. No, you know what? These hate groups are a great racket. Man, they rake it in hand over and fist. So, having gotten wind of all of this, a coalition of civil rights organization and activists yesterday took a petition with 100,000 signatures on it and a letter co-signed by 34 different faith groups insisting that Hyatt refused to host the anti-Muslim scumbags at their hotel in Crystal City. And yes, it's this weekend. It's, well, not really, it's next week. It's September the 4th and 5th. It's Tuesday and Wednesday. Reverend Ron Steef and Catherine Mary Lohr, co-chairs of Shoulder to Shoulder, which is a coalition of 34 religious denominations and organizations that speak out in support of American Muslims. In other words, patriotic Americans. Said, Act for America is a hate group, plain and simple. The hate espoused by ACT directly impacts Americans who are Muslim, including the many Muslim families of Northern Virginia, where most of Virginia's 300,000-plus Muslims live. Just last year, in March 2017, the home of a Muslim family in Alexandria, walking distance from your hotel, was the target of hateful vandalism. Make no mistake, they chose the location for a reason. Continuing, the coalition wrote, at a time in our nation's history when hate groups and white supremacists have gained public attention and propagated violence through rallies and public events, and when anti-Muslim hate crimes have reached unprecedented levels, we're asking you to consider your moral responsibility as a corporation to contribute to a society that espouses inclusion and dignity rather than the hate and fear-mongering to which Act for America is committed. The Hyatt organization, and we'll just rush to the end here. It'll be a cold day in hell before, even if I could afford it. I've stayed in a Hyatt in the past. It'd be a cold day in hell before I ever stayed in another Hyatt. Plain and simple. Want nothing to do with them. Because, we've heard about the complaints. But according to Mila Delphin, who's an executive assistant to the general manager at the Hyatt Regency in Crystal City, we've heard of the complaints, but, and this is a quote, we made a decision not to discriminate against any group because they have freedom of speech, too. We made a decision not to cancel this meeting. They have freedom of speech, too. They, the anti-Muslim hate group, which, of course, has white supremacist and Nazi-ish overtones, have freedom of speech, too. Well, yes, they're covered by the First Amendment. The government of the United States of America, under the Constitution of the United States, cannot suppress the political speech of Act for America, no matter how obnoxious and hateful it is, because of our fetishized interpretation of the First Amendment. No getting around it. Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Jason with an update on Sandpoint, Idaho. After the O.J. trial, corrupt, crooked, racist cop Mark Furman retired at 35 years old and made a beeline to Sandpoint, Idaho, if that tells you anything. That tells me a boatload. So, here's the problem. Telling a bunch of scummy racists and bigots that they cannot have a meeting on your property is not a violation of their free speech rights. Act for America has free speech rights under the First Amendment of the Constitution, but I have yet to know, I've yet to see anything suggesting that the Hyatt Hotels chain is an arm of the United States government, so Mila Delphin can piss right up a rope. Because that is a bullshit, chicken shit, weak-ass, pathetic attempt at hiding the fact that they just want the $299 a night from the bigots. Now, this is made. This whole thing is made worse by the fact that the Hyatt chain... how can I explain this? When we say... when, for instance, when a corporation goes out and says, well, we've installed solar panels and we're getting our electricity from wind turbines, and then you find out that they're actually, for instance, a member of ALEC or the Petroleum Institute of America's corporate auxiliary or whatever, that's called greenwashing. In other words, making your organization appear to be environmentally conscious and cognizant of things like renewable, sustainable energy and ecology and reuse, recycle, right, when actually their underlying philosophy is pure toxic bullshit. Well, I think I'm inventing a term here this evening. Brownwashing. And that's a term that I used, I apply to corporations that say things like, on a global scale, we're standing up against all forms of discrimination. We know that we can only be truly inclusive workplace if we create an environment that allows our colleagues to bring their whole selves to work every day so they can be their best and better care for others. Yes. That's Malika Myers, the Chief Human Resources Officer of Hyatt, in a press release in which Hyatt announced its diversity initiatives. And then, of course, Hyatt turns around and says, you know, we got Muslims working for us, but we're going to host an anti-Muslim bigot group because we want the money, and our diverse workforce that includes Muslims can just shut the f*** up and eat it and smile because money. That, according to my new term, if it does not already exist, it probably already exists, is brownwashing.
Look, we believe so much in diversity, yes. We're inclusive. Rah! We want everybody to bring their whole selves to work every day so they can be their best and better care for others. Except the Muslims. They need to leave their Musliminess at home when we're hosting the anti-Muslim bigot group. Be best.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Other global hotel chains are refusing to host these bigoted hate groups. Hilton, Wyndham, Airbnb, Accor Hotels, Intercontinental, all have at one time or another refused to allow hate groups to stay at or hold meetings in their in their establishments. Scott Simpson, Public Advocacy Director for Muslim Advocates, said, "Yet Hyatt is opening its doors to Act for America to stay with their guests and staff and even giving them a discount. Hyatt could take a better path that's more in line with both its claimed corporate values and the values of the nearly 100,000 consumers speaking up. But until then, it seems that Hyatt is content to be one of the last resorts." Ah, clever language usage. "One of the last resorts for racists." So not that we wield a hell of a lot of power or anything, but maybe look up Hyatt on Twitter or go to Hyatt's Facebook page and say, "Hey," not that I'm...
"Quit telling us how to tell people we'll never stay in their hotels, Bob."
But you could, if you wanted to, go to Hyatt's Facebook page or their Twitter account and tell them it'll be a cold day in hell when you'll run the risk of laying your head on a pillow that has previously hosted a filthy anti-Muslim bigot. Racist. And that you don't believe their bullshit, brownwashed diversity statement for a goddamn second. I'll try to do that myself after the program. God, that's disgusting. Mila Delphin, the executive assistant to the general manager of the Hyatt Regency in Crystal City, who, you know, she doesn't get to just say stuff. It has to be approved, like, by the general manager. Who, for a minute, trots out, "Well, they've got freedom of speech." I guess the same thing applies to the Klan. Or the League of the South. Wonder how Hyatt would like it if they, if the League of the South came to their Crystal City Hotel or any other Hyatt and had an Israeli flag burning ceremony. Or a great big public prayer in one of their ballrooms where they prayed for the god that the ancient Hebrews invented to kill all the people who invented him. I wonder how they'd... I mean...
"Well, they've got freedom of speech, too."
You know, there's a reason that Dr. Bill O'Brien named his program the Virtual Center for the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. If you actually believe that the Constitution of the United States prevents Hyatt from telling an anti-Muslim hate group that it can't stay in their hotel, you have no knowledge of the Constitution or civics in this country whatsoever. With a caveat. You know, this meeting's taking place in Crystal City, not far from the mall in Washington, D.C., and the mall itself is only a mile or so from Capitol Hill, where sits the Supreme Court of the United States. And with the Act for America bigots meeting on September the 4th, well, it's worth mentioning that the other thing that's going to happen on September the 4th is the hearings are going to open into the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to be a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Brett Kavanaugh of the mysterious $200,000 plus mysterious, I said mysterious twice, yes, baseball tickets that just suddenly, miraculously, out of nowhere, got paid off because he had, you know, he forgot about that 200,000 large that he had sitting around, and oh, whoops, the baby, I forgot to pay the credit card bill with the $200,000 balance on it. Oh, there's the $200,000. Yeah. Is that strictly coincidental? In this case, it probably is. because they were pitching this thing, this little hate rally of theirs for a while. Larry asking, what about Motel 6? I mean, Tom Baudet will leave the light on for you, but if you have some melanin, he may have to make a friendly call to ICE just to check you out. There's always Super 8, though. Now, this is not the point in time where I cue up Jason Isbell singing Don't Want to Die in a Super 8. Lee in New York says, my Hyatt story. I attended a science fiction convention in Chicago in the 1980s. When checking out, I asked for the credit card carbon pages. The clerk said, oh yeah, you're from New York. They have crime there. Well, I was not going to just let that pass by. I said, Chicago doesn't have police or prisons. Did someone named Capone live somewhere around here? Well played, Lee. Lee adds, KKK at the hotel. They'd love staying at a good hotel. You can be sure their garments will come back from the laundry extra white. And you always get nice white sheets at the upscale hotel. Meanwhile, Todd in South Carolina, Stan, with the subject line, be best, says, remember, Bob, if you can't be best, take your clothes off for money. And why not? Well, like I said, we're celebrating the waning days of naked radio here at the Horn, in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. And all I would have to do is turn on a video camera right now, and the program would die. So, no, Todd. So let's, Hyatt. I wonder where Marriott stands on that. Don't know. Meanwhile, checking in with other aggrieved white people. How about we run out to California? Because, yes, y'all have this problem, too. It's not just a Florida problem, not just an Alabama problem, not just a Virginia problem. It's a California problem, because racism and anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim bigotry is, well, you know, hate is pervasive in this nation. So let's check in Orange County, California, which, of course, is a bastion of wingnuttery. And let's check in with a lawyer by the name of Christina Ignatius. And she's not pissed off and piqued about the Muslims or the Jews or the black people. No, Christina Ignatius of Orange County, a lawyer there who describes herself as a top law tutor, she's pissed off at the Asians. God, is there anybody on this earth that white people aren't mad at? Christina Ignatius said, the Asians that took over Orange County. My friend said that there is something coming out called Crazy Rich Asians. It reminds me of all the Asians who flooded into Orange County. Flooded, you know, because, you know, people never say good thing. They never describe anything good as being a flood. No. Mm-mm. Not only bad things are described as floods, because floods are generally bad. It reminds me of all the Asians who flooded into Orange County and then took over our mall at South Coast Plaza. Not our mall. In fact, they came up with a shopping word called snoshy. It stands for posh and snobby. You can see them around Fendi, Dior, Gucci, and Louis Vuitton. They have a zoned-in personality where they act as if no one else exists and they just run straight in front of you to grab the next purse. Well, how many purses were you buying, sister? They also drive this way near South Coast Plaza. They'll drive in their Mercedes in the carpool lane and then cut across five lanes to get over to the mall as if your car right next to them didn't even matter. That's why we have the term driving like an Asian. Now, I'm familiar with that fabulous song, Walk Like an Egyptian, but I've never heard Drive Like an Asian. But now they're trying to get tutoring from me for law school. They keep telling me that they're attending UCRA. I need to translate that into my head to deduce that they're going to UCLA.
Oh, she's just hitting all the greatest hits of Asian smearing.
Is there anything in here about flied lice? If you went to UCI like I did, you probably went to school with a lot of rice rockets. Asians flooded that school if they were smart and could get in. That would be University of California, Irvine, if I'm not mistaken. They went there to become doctors. They were raised by tiger moms who told them to become doctor. And then if they were not smart enough to become a doctor, to marry doctor. If they didn't marry a doctor, then they were encouraged to marry a lawyer. Yes, my sucker Caucasian male lawyer friends who married Asian women were completely poached for dollars and earning potential. Bet I know how she votes. Mm-hmm. Now she deleted it, just like she deleted this one. She's,
I really love them, and I find differences to be funny and interesting.
That's something she wrote on a post of a video called Shit Asian Moms Say. This country is so immensely fucked. But sometimes there's a good moment that comes along. One of those nice young Mormons stopped to talk to a fella, and they just happened to get videoed in the process. That's pretty good. Just a minute. We ready? All right, let's roll.
I would definitely want to let my family hear the message that y'all got for us, because it's a very interesting message. So,
yeah,
say what you got to say.
So you've heard of the Book of Mormon before?
I've heard of the Book of Mormon.
Okay. Yep. Have you had a chance to read it?
I have. You want to go to a scripture for me? Second Nephi 5:21.
Second Nephi 5:21.
I love it. I love this scripture.
Oh shit. He's ready with his Book of Mormon citations. 7 Nephi 5 and what? Omaha! Omaha! Never mind. Do let's continue. This guy may wind up being my hero.
Yeah?
This is a good scripture. 2 Nephi 5 and 21. Because the brothers came over here.
2 Nephi.
Come here. Family about God. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You want to read that for me?
2 Nephi, peach and orange soda. Yes.
Second Nephi 5, yep. Verse 21.
Read it for me.
Okay. And he had caused the cursing to come upon them.
He had caused the cursing. Read it a little louder. He had caused the cursing to come upon them.
Are you recording us right now?
Yeah, but this is the word of God. So, uh-huh. Yeah, I want everybody to hear this. So,
okay.
Yeah, but he had caused the what?
And he had caused the cursing to come upon them.
He had caused the cursing to come upon them, read.
Yea, even a sore cursing.
Even a sore cursing. This is a bad cursing, read.
Because of their iniquity.
Because of their sins, he caused this curse to come upon them. What is that curse?
For behold, they had hardened their hearts against him.
Read.
They had become like unto a flint.
That they had become unto like a flint, read.
Therefore, as they were white.
The blessing was that at first they was white, mm-hmm. Right? But then now God cursed them and he did what? Read that part again.
Christ.
At first they was white. Keep reading. You make me like you don't know the book. Nah, come on, read.
Wherefore, as they were white,
they started off white.
Fair and delightsome.
They were fair and delightsome when they were white, read.
That they might not be enticing unto the people.
But to make them not enticing to the people, read.
The Lord God is because of the sin of black.
He made them, he turned them black because of their iniquities. So because of their sins against God, he turned them black. You come to my house to teach my family that God turned us black because we sinned against God. That's not going to be acceptable at all. But what I can do for you is tell you that in the book of Revelations 10. Okay, let's just read. Let's just read it. That way we're not guessing at all. Because I like I said, I love the Bible, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. We'll start in Romans.
Stop.
I like that. That's even better.
Sorry.
I should just grab my Bible. My phone acting real slow right now.
Hey, I have a Bible right here.
You got a Bible?
Yeah.
This is a Bible?
Yeah. King James.
Yeah, this is even King James.
Okay. Yeah, it's King James. This is a good one.
Okay. This is a good sword right here.
Yeah. Yeah, we read the King James and the Book of Mormon. We believe them. Okay. Both be the Word of God.
Right.
So no living Bible for those Mormons.
Right here, cursed with blackness.
No, that's not what we teach.
No,
right?
New International Version.
A little bit out of context as well.
No. It's up what it said. Listen to this, though. But this is what I like.
Wait. I love it. The little Mormon's finally trying to fight back. Oh, you took that out of context. He sounds like the Republican he is. Is that you, grandson of Bishop Willard Romney? No, probably not. That's just how they're taught. Anytime anybody finds a verse in the Book of Mormon, you tell them that says something awful, you tell them it's out of context. Yeah.
I definitely want to let my family hear the message that y'all got for it. Now God cursed him, and he did what? Read that part again.
No, we got, okay.
Revelations 10. Okay, let's just read it. That way we're not guessing at all. Because I love the Bible, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start in Romans.
Stop.
I like that. That's even better.
Sorry.
Phone's running slow.
Right now. Okay, I have a Bible right here.
You got a Bible?
Yeah.
This is Bible.
I love this.
Yeah. All praises. Okay.
Oh, this is good.
This is a good sword right here.
Yeah. Yeah, we read the King James and the Book of Mormon. We believe them.
Okay.
Both be the Word of God.
Right. So you definitely believe my family right here is cursed with blackness.
No. That's not what we teach, right? You may be taking it a little bit out of context as well.
No. It's up what it said. Listen to this, though. But this is what I like. This is what I like. So you believe in the whole Bible.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We read Nephi, all of that, right?
Yeah.
So we're starting Revelation. Revelations 13:10 says, no, let's start at 9, because I like how it starts at 9.
Exactly.
We all can relate to 9.
Yeah.
The book of Revelation, chapter 13, verse 9, it says, if any man have an ear, let him hear. We all got ears. We're all men, right?
Yeah.
So it just means if you got understanding, let him hear, right?
Yeah.
He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. What does that mean?
If you lead someone towards captivity, you will
slavery, also... right? If you lead them into slavery, you're going to go into slavery, right? Captivity, slavery, bondage, right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. What did your forefathers do to my forefathers? They led us, you guys led us into slavery, right? So you led my people into slavery. You must go into slavery. You come over here to teach my family that they were cursed because of their sins with black skin. I don't think that's necessarily true. What I think is that you guys got cursed because it's clear that you're allergic to the sun. You understand what I'm saying to you? You're allergic to the sun. You can't be out here too long.
So you know what? I know that to be true.
So we don't have
I
no
am allergic to the sun.
In front of my house, all right? So y'all have a nice day.
Yeah.
And y'all keep up y'all ministry, which is absolutely trash for my people. But for you guys, it works. Y'all keep doing what y'all doing. But please try not to tell my people that y'all don't. You want the Bible? I can keep it.
If you'd like it. I mean, this is yours, right? If you'd like it.
What, do it got Nephi in it?
No. This is the
Holy
Bible.
This don't have Nephi in it?
No. So we believe the
Holy
Bible.
Where's the Book of Nephi?
And the Book of Mormon.
Can I have that one too?
There's seven if you'd like it.
Oh, yeah. I'll take this one too.
That's yours.
I
want you to know.
Right.
I have not a racist bone in my body.
No, it doesn't. It's not about race. What it is about truth. Truth is that you guys have to go into slavery. You put us in slavery. God said we can't go on anything but what God says. God says that if you lead people into slavery, you're going to go into slavery. Your fathers left you with a hell of a bill to pay. So just be prepared for that bill. Y'all keep walking around and teaching this false doctrine that y'all got, but it is what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is what it is. But here's the trick. They're in bondage, those young men. They are in bondage to one of the most pernicious things that you can be enslaved to. Fear and ignorance. And the chances of them ever breaking free from it are approaching every mathematical concept of zero that there is. So that brings us pretty much to the end of the filibobster. Let me check in here with Sparky. By the way, an update with from Jason. UC Irvine, yes, on the rich end of the OC. But to be fair, you don't have to rely on second knee-high orange and peach to get that business about people of dark skin having been cursed by the great big, very white, bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, because you can find that in the Old Testament, too. It's, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the sin of Ham, curse of Ham. Yeah. Right. Alexander says, if black people are naturally cursed, then also are white folks and all the rest of humanity, because all humanity came from us black people. That includes these stupid-ass, hateful white... What the... Well, but see, that's the problem. They don't acknowledge that. Whenever you run across somebody who denies evolution, you're running across a racist, because the denial of evolution is predicated upon white supremacy. Just saying. So we'll get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable fired up real quick. And we will begin the evening's festivities of Friday on the Front Porch. Let me share a note that came in from our buddy Matt in San Francisco before we go to the group. As you may remember, my sister Constance passed away earlier this year after a short fight with pancreatic cancer. Yesterday, her husband, my brother-in-law, Glenn Schoonover, passed away in his sleep as COPD claimed another victim in the poor state of New Mexico. I'm sure the ultra-rich families of R.J. Reynolds and other tobacco behemoth families dined a fine meal and are going about their busy day without giving a thought to the increasing body count that makes all their fun and frivolity possible. So today's challenge, in honor of Glenn, $200 to the horn. Match it if you wish, Horndonistas. If you're not financially able, no need to feel anything other than part of the Horn family. Information is power. That's why the powerful try so hard to control information. And that's also why we need the Horn. Thank you, Matt. I had promised this week would be a fundraising-free week, but when something like that happens, I'm going to share it. So... Matt has put a challenge on the table in memory of his brother-in-law, his sister having passed earlier this year. My condolences, Matt, and the condolences of all the Horn family community congregation go out both to you, your family, and all those who knew and loved your sister Constance and your brother-in-law, Glenn. As I like to say, may their fond memory be their share in eternity. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very kindly. So it's 4 minutes past the hour. We've had plenty to talk about in the first hour, but I bet we're going to have all kinds of stuff to talk about when we get over to the front porch. And let me remind folks that something new and wonderful is available here. The Stress Line is now available for the front porch. So that number, of course, is area code 304-640-2829. Area code 304-640-2829. Of course, Skype is easy. If you want to participate in the front porch, just fire up Skype and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail to the great big old holler tree where we keep the extraordinary ordinary round table around which we gather about this time every week. So hey, Sparky.
Hey there, Bob.
Another lovely day in the man cave?
Oh, yeah. Anytime it's under 90 degrees, it's a lovely day in the man cave.
Is that the break point? 90 degrees and under is when you're man cave and you fold space, and 90 degrees and over and you're Sparky?
Yeah, pretty much. It depends. Because the bucket coolers can't keep up with 90 degree days.
Yeah, I can well imagine. The air conditioner in the studio here struggles to keep up with 80 degree days. That's part of why Naked Radio.
But I did do something to help try to cool down the place. I watered down the underneath the canopy here, just outside the shop. So maybe the air is a little bit cooler from there.
Nice.
I got an announcement to make.
Yes.
According to Steve, what he told me a week or so ago, this may be the last night I can use the old Skype for the chat, because he said CNET had an article said that they were going to kill the old Skype on the 1st of September.
Oh, brother, so your life is going to get even more challenged.
Well, it won't be challenged. I won't have any control, silent control to mute people anymore, because it didn't work with the new Skype.
Yeah, right, when there's all kinds of noise and stuff in the background, yeah.
Yeah, when Billable Rick starts going off on something, so you might have to...
So I'll have to mute the whole group on this end.
Yeah, if somebody's doing that.
So just be mindful, and you know, it's not just about Billable Rick. It's about, you know, sirens in the background and all manner of things that contribute to a noisy conversation.
Yeah, and don't be ringing any cowbells.
Well, no, we grandmothered in Clarity's cowbell.
What about mine?
Well, you've got one too. You're grandfathered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean that just, you know, we can't turn it into a thing. Everybody can't bring their own bell.
Oh, I don't know if you saw my note earlier, but John plans on being here tonight.
Okay. Well, I figured he'd have a lot to talk about relative to Beto just after the hopeless. You know, the hopeless drubbing that the poor Texas Republicans took this year.
Yeah, but it wasn't on his mind today when he did his rant. See, I talked to him right before he does his rant and right after he does his rant.
Yeah.
On Discord channel. So that's how I contact him, to get in touch. But he didn't have anything to say about that, but I'm sure he'll be happy to talk about that instead of other things that are weighing on his mind.
Beto O'Rourke, roller skating at Whataburger. I mean, there's nothing that those poor Republicans can do that he can't turn around and stick in them and break off. It's beautiful. Of course, I don't think just anybody could do it. I think Beto O'Rourke is a man of extremely high talent and high intellect. With a razor sharp wit.
Did you see that video of Ted Cruz playing basketball?
Oh yeah. I was surprised he didn't shoot a free throw, go to the free throw line and set and shoot one of those old Rick Barry set shot free throws from between his legs.
Tries to do a layup, and the basketball goes over the backboard.
Yeah, he looked like me playing, but no, it's sad.
That's one thing I could do pretty good in high school is do layups.
Oh, you know, I almost destroyed my knees when they tried to introduce us. It was like seventh grade or so. They tried to introduce us to the three-man weave, and I was totally lost. And what? I mean, it was like mathematics in gym class. It was horrible.
Well, that's all I do in gym class. I was one of the first to get picked because I was so damn tall.
Early in the height department. Yeah.
Well, I was 6'4". There was one other person in the whole senior class who was 6'4".
I didn't know you were that tall, Sparky.
Well, I've shrunk since then because I've lived on Earth for a long time. Gravity's compressed me.
Yeah, but it's not like you're a hobbit now.
No. They told me at the doctor's office I was 6'2½". So I lost an inch and a half.
Yeah, well, the back injury, right?
Well, maybe because of the back. Who knows? I have knees. Bad knee. You know, I've spent 66 years on this planet, so gravity's been pulling on me for a long time.
Well, no kidding. I don't think I'm 6'2 anymore. I like to continue to pretend, but I probably don't. Hey, I've got to issue a correction. I've been called out. Flavio has called me out. Beto O'Rourke was skateboarding. Get it right. That's harder than roller skating. You ever been up on rollerblades, Flavio? But no, he's on a skateboard. So, yeah, that's about a billion times cooler. There's a challenge. Let's see Beto O'Rourke and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Let's see them debate while skateboarding. It could be the Great Texas Half Pipe Debate. That could be fun.
I bet you if I had a skateboard, I could still skateboard in here.
If I tried to...
I was skateboarding as a kid, the shop wasn't here. So I never got the skateboard.
If I tried to get on a skateboard, I would no longer have ankles or knees. It would be pathetic.
That's one thing my minion doesn't do. He doesn't skateboard.
Is it that big a thing anymore?
No, he collects bugs. He's got lizards and scorpions as pets.
Ew, scorpions? Pass, thanks.
And he's into RC cars.
Now, I confess the bug collecting could be kind of cool. That leads you down the road toward biology and entomology and stuff, but At least he's not constantly sitting inside in the dark playing video games. Hey, by the way, just had a note from Steve in New York. Sparky is not a hobbit. He's more like a woodland elf as opposed to a Rivendell elf. Lord of the Rings reference. Okay. All right. Yeah, we can. Elves are cool. Not like that Santa's Workshop elf stuff, Sparky. That's actually a compliment.
Yeah, but, well, anyway, my minion has talked me into buying an RC car.
Oh, are y'all going to race? Yeah,
if he finishes building the track out back here, that's the only way. See, I got a message in my madness. Grady was going after the gophers out there last winter.
Yeah.
And dug big old holes all over the place. I'm getting him to fill in the holes.
Man, that's the sharpest thing since Tom Sawyer got everybody else to paint the fence for him.
Well, I gave him a goal to do. If he wants me to buy an RC car, he's got to build the track.
Yeah, where else are you going to race?
Yeah.
Oh, you're crafty. You're a crafty one. Well, who else do we have hanging out with us this evening? Billable Rick is gone this week, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, he's showing
up green, man.
He's celebrating his mom's birthday in Iowegia right now, I think, because he said he couldn't make the Jason Isbell concert this evening at the Greek. Otherwise, he'd have been there. Tracy's here, and Tracy sat and watched the entirety of the Aretha Franklin funeral and sent me play-by-play through the day. It is over now, isn't it, Tracy?
It is over. It just ended right before you went on to the front porch. It probably ended about 3:45 my time, so 6:45 your time.
And started when?
Well, they started bringing people into the church. It was supposed to start at 10. The family did 10 o'clock your time. The family didn't get in until damn near 12 o'clock. The choir and stuff have been there since at least 9 o'clock your time.
Okay, hold on now. So, I mean, is there a...
8 hours? Nine hours?
Is there an explanation for why the family was late? I mean, is that a thing? I mean...
It's just that, honey, like I was telling you or texting you earlier, it's a black church thing. It really, really is. I mean, my grandmother's funeral, and she was not a dignitary, but she, you know, she was an amazing woman.
She was a grandmother.
She was a grandmother. Her funeral was 4 hours. And like I said, my mom had to pay extras because of the time that it took for us to get to the cemetery and, you know, reopen the crypt. And like I said, my former pastor, his funeral went so long that it was damn near dark before they got to the cemetery. Which is, now that you realize that, you know, because when I stopped watching, they were, you know, loading her into the hearse. So they still have to get to the grave site, and there's going to be a processional of like 100 pink Cadillacs going there. That's not
Wait,
including.
Did you just say 100 pink Cadillacs?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know there were 100 pink Cadillacs in the United States.
I didn't know that either. It's supposed to be 100 pink Cadillacs. The pink Cadillacs started going there like not long after she passed away because of her song "Pink Cadillac."
Right.
So
must have been a Mary Kay convention.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe they borrowed them from the Mary Kay reps.
Maybe, but have you found? I found some of this. Remember, I was asking you, had you heard or seen anything that Michael Eric Dyson?
I didn't get to that. I haven't had a chance to get to that.
So basically, he wrote. Well, he said, let's see, because I had to look it up. Let's see. He called Trump I'm just going to spell it because you're the wordsmith. L-U-G-U-B.
A lugubrious. Lugubrious.
He called Donald Trump a lugubrious leech.
You're kind of our cultural emissary here. Is one to expect that sort of thing at a funeral?
Well, see, that's the thing. I was okay because I didn't know what to expect because knowing, you know, what I've read since Aretha Franklin died about her civil rights thing and, you know, and how she was definitely, you know, unapologetically black and, you know, getting Angela Davis, you know, putting up bail money for Angela Davis and all these things. And it's not surprising to me that people just say these things, like, you know, Reverend Al Sharpton digging at Trump early in the funeral and Judge Mathis going on, pile driving on Rick Snyder. And then Michael Eric Dyson, I mean, when he went off on Trump, I didn't expect it. I've never I've never seen.
So wait. Are you telling me that we can look forward over the weekend and into like probably Tuesday, mm-hmm. countless hours of white wing butt hurt?
Oh, honey, it is going to be. It is. I'm trying. It is going to be. And a May. Trump is somewhere cowering. Somebody tweeted. Let's see.
Well, we probably need to go back and examine Lugubrious first.
Yes. Oh, that's what Merriam-Webster. Even Merriam-Webster tweeted, listen to this, searches for Lugubrious jump 3,200%. During Michael Eric Dyson's speech at Aretha, and hashtag Aretha homecoming. 3,200%.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I didn't have it immediately to hand, and not to the degree of the list I've got here, but I got to LU, and my search engine went lugubrious.
Okay, that's because of, like I said, 3,200%.
Well, here's a project for the resistance over the course of the weekend. Just start, you know, if a few million people type lugubrious Trump into search engines, a picture of Trump will pop up with anybody searching lugubrious.
Yep.
And the short answer is lugubrious is to look kind of grim all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The formal.
I had to look it up too.
Yeah, the formal. The formal definition says adjective, looking or sounding sad and dismal. His face looked even more lugubrious than usual. And then you get the synonyms list. Man, what a list of synonyms this is. Mournful, gloomy, sad, unhappy, doleful. Here's one for the ages. Eeyore-ish. Thanks for noticing me. Glum, melancholy, melancholic. Woeful, miserable, woebegone, forlorn, despondent, dejected, depressed, long-faced, somber, solemn, serious, sorrowful, morose, dour, mirthless, cheerless, joyless, wretched, dismal, grim, saturnine, pessimistic, funereal, sepulchral, dirge-like, elegiac, down in the mouth, down in the dumps, blue, looking as if one had lost a pound and found a penny, dolorous.
This is, okay, so I found what he said. And then this orange apparition had the nerve to say she worked for him. Dyson said to applause, "You lugubrious leech, you doppelganger of deceit and deviance, you lethal liar, you dim-witted dictator, you foolish fascist. She ain't worked for you, she worked above you, she worked beyond you. Get your preposition right."
Oh, that's beautiful.
We have the video.
The maggots are going to be losing their minds, and plus they'll hurt plus they'll probably hurt themselves trying to find look up all those damn words.
Right.
We have the video, Sparky?
Yeah, I posted it in both chats.
Here we go. Rolling now. Stand by, please.
Roll now.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
To Bishop Ellis and Reverend Smith, to President Clinton and her husband, Bill.
Whoa.
Neoliberal establishment shill.
To Attorney General, soon to be President Holder. And to Reverend Jackson and Minister Farrakhan.
Oh, they'll have a fit over Farrakhan, too.
If some cosmic ethnographer were to drop down here and do a biopsy, an extract of living tissue of black genius, here today would be the veritable cornucopia of its radical expression. We done had all kind of singing up in here, from high European-derived classical composition to the gut-bucket gospel grueling reality of our blues and soul traditions. We have heard singers hit high notes and pan the depths of the diapason stop of the range and scale of American music. But we are here for one voice, one reason.
Hey, just a brief interruption, a timeout real quick. You know why he's using all them $10 words? Because he knows Donald Trump will not understand one of them, and neither will the maggots. That's my guess.
Reason. One woman who was a freakishly precocious woman. A bronze wunderkind of the gospel. Born in the legendary rhetorical room she gestated in of her father, Clarence Levon Franklin. She took me one day to the Triumph Awards, and there she had me attempt to explain his genius. C.L. Franklin practice the species of black sacred speech called hooping. How does one explain hooping? The coarsened articulation, the striated diction, the elastic grammar, speech pressured by music that turns into song. You will quickly see one of the greatest exemplars of that rhetorical form in the presence of the Reverend Dr. Jasper Williams. But it was in that womb that she was born, and in that Mississippi mud arrived Detroit deity. Aretha Franklin at 14 sang Never Grow Old. And in singing it, you could feel the theological prescience and the clairvoyance that God gave to her. She became a vehicle of the on high purpose that was radiated in that beautiful brown body. And when Aretha sang at 14, she convinced people that indeed she would never grow old. But then she recorded the song again when she was 30 years old. And in recording that song on her epic Amazing Grace, where she gave us a vision of a return to the gospel world that her father claimed she had never left anyhow. And then when she sang that song about 5 minutes and 21 seconds in, on a 9 minute and 57 second song, you felt the volcanic eruption. The glissando, the melisma, stretching a single note across several syllables so that she could articulate the deep and profound realities that only song could capture. Aretha sang that song at 30 in a different way she sang it at 14. Why is that? Between 14 and 30, there was a whole bunch of living. She never loved a man the way she loved that man. She said, if you're going to be a man demanding a do-right woman, you better be a do-right man. Now, we know the great scholar Farrah Jasmine Griffin speaks about the inchoate feminist perspective, never calling her feminist, because Aretha Franklin never called herself a feminist, but she had feminist sensibilities, the independent, autonomous reach of black female identity was ringing in her rhetoric.
She was Black Girl Magic before there was Black Girl Magic. And so between 14 and 30, there was a lot of living. There was a chain of fools that she was conscribed into. There was the reality of the hurt and pain, the ardor, the ecstasy, the suffering, and the reality that we had to confront as a Black people. And don't get it twisted, she was Black without apology or excuse. And she was American without argument or exception. She was Black because she was from the blackest city in the world. Detroit. I know y'all jealous. You from Chicago, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. You good, but you ain't got the D. Dottonetta Shrimp Shack, Faygo Red Pop, Verner's Ginger Ale, Coney Island Hot Dog.
Got the crowd on their feet with that one.
Hitched a ride in a Cadillac and found its destiny in a Ford. We had Motown music. I know everybody else had music, but y'all ain't had it like Detroit had it. The greatest artist ever produced, Mr. Stevie Wonder. The greatest songwriter ever, Smokey Robinson. And for a long while, the greatest entertainer, Mr. Michael Jackson. And the greatest singer in the world, Aretha Franklin. She was an edifying thief. She took other people's songs and made them her own. When Otis Redding heard her sing, he said, "She done took my song." Oh, yes, she did, and he was glad she took it. Because she spelled out in a way he never spelled out respect. She had to articulate it and enunciate it so folk could understand what she was talking about. Then in that belly of blackness in Detroit, without apology or excuse, that embrace of her blackness led her to be political. We got all kind of music now that ain't got nothing to do with nothing except cars and money and glory. I ain't mad at that, but she was about getting Angela Davis out of jail. She was about working with Martin Luther King Jr. and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. She was about transforming the existence of Black America. Now Negroes scared to say they Black. Scared to show up at a too Black place. That's why some Black folk ain't here today. They sending letters. They don't want to get up in this blackness. They don't want to feel the nasty power of this blackness. We are Black in Detroit. We don't care. Take your shoes off. Dip it in the water. Get baptized.
Whew.
And then this orange apparition had the nerve to say she worked for him. You lugubrious leech. You dopey doppelganger of deceit and deviance. You lethal liar. You dim-witted dictator. You foolish fascist. She ain't worked for you. She worked above you. She worked beyond you. Get your preposition right. Then he got the nerve to say he gonna grab it. That ain't what Aretha Franklin said. I'ma give you something you can feel. Like the brothers in the street say, tap lightly, like a woodpecker with a headache. And so, don't you sully the memory of our great queen. Aretha Franklin was an original. Never one like her before, never another like her afterward. She was bold and brilliant and courageous and beautiful and indebted to the traditions that spark our renewal. She refused to sell out. She remained herself all along in her life. And so as I take my seat, you got to remember Aretha Franklin gave us something deep and powerful. And when she made her transition, Farrah Jasmine Griffin, the professor at Columbia, said she was doing work even after she died. When she made her transition, convictions came down. Immunity pleas were made. Folk got sent to jail. Even as an ancestor, she doing work. She moved from being the queen of soul to the queen of souls. She is indeed looking over us as our ancestor, never forgetting that she will walk with us. I had to go the other day from South Bend, Indiana, into Chicago, leaving Notre Dame, going to Chicago to speak. My ticket said the plane left at 4:33, but it arrived at 4:20. I had landed before I took off. If you ain't already at where you going, you ain't gonna be there when you arrive. You got to already know where you heading. Aretha Franklin ain't just made no transition. She been building up her housing equity in another place with another God who loved her soul. She was already there. She said a prayer for us. She loved us. And now she is the queen of our souls. Long live the queen. Long live the queen.
Whew. That's two of those. Y'all still there? You done? You passed out.
Wow, that's powerful.
That is just that's pure truth. And you know what? Not to make this about something else, but because Michael Eric Dyson did make it about something else. What that was right there, and I just sent a note to Tracy saying the same thing. What that was a masterclass on how you treat Donald fucking Trump. You do not accord him the respect of the office because he did not earn the office and he has in himself no respect. And so whoever winds up challenging him in 2020, I hope, watches that video time after time after time and learn and sees how to go on the offensive against a walking embarrassment to this nation. God, that was powerful. That was exquisite. I just had a note from Mike in Cascadia, subject line Aretha. Goddamn, Bob, I'm weed eating and shedding tears listening to Michael Eric Dyson. I had a note from Kitty in Boston. Kitty said, I watched the whole thing, too. There was shade thrown covertly and overtly all day long. Reverend Al told it right, too. Aretha performed for Thug 45. She never took orders from anyone. Jack in Shreveport, subject line, words. This is interesting. This is from the Department of Listening to Pink Floyd albums backwards, and I think it's pretty good. Lugubrious sort of sounds like legume and goober together, both referring to peas, which in turn sounds like pee. So it sounds like we could have a secret reference to the pee tape. Huh? Could it be? I like it. That's worth a jingle. Thank you, Jack. But, you know, sometimes things are more than they seem. And in this case, I think that, yeah, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to have T-shirts with Michael Eric Dyson's face printed on the front of it, and What it says is what he said. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Perfect.
I fear that kind of rendered the group's gone all quiet. I fear that may have rendered us speechless. Scott said,
"I don't know. There were some awful big words that I didn't understand."
I got most of them, but Scott in San Diego says, "Whew, mercy! A lot of people got taken to church today through the good offices of Michael Eric Dyson." Michael in Madison, subject line: Michael Eric Dyson. Can we just cut out the middleman and run Michael Eric Dyson against Drumpf in 2020? Michael and I are often on the same wavelength, and that occurred to me. Why is this man not just taking it to Donald Trump smack dab where he lives?
He doesn't get on TV that often anymore.
No, I think he's a little too potent for TV anymore.
I didn't read his last book. Did anyone read his last book? I heard it was excellent.
I have not. I probably need to.
Yeah, I do too.
Meanwhile, Jack in Shreveport adds, I saw Michael Eric Dyson on MSNBC yesterday. It's been a while since I've seen him. I don't know why. What Sparky said. In the part I saw, he was dressing down DeSantis passionately. After that, on Kanye West, he said, Kanye, I love you, but you're wrong, and I hope you come back. And that's only a crude paraphrasing.
I hope they go after that jerk in Florida, hammer and tong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And like I said, you know, make him wear monkey like they tattooed it on George Allen with Macaca. And the thing is, since he said it so close to the beginning of general election season, you know, Labor Day, that means you don't have to work so hard to sustain it. If you had to sustain monkey for, you know, 9 or 10 months, it would be very difficult. But in this case, there's only a couple of months, and you can absolutely paint him with it. You can put him in a plaster cast with monkey stamped all over it and make him stumble all over Florida with it.
Somebody needs to take that old Trump monkey commercial and put that dude in the driver's seat when the Trump monkey comes around with the tire iron and clobbers him.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah, we got some talented video folks out there. That might happen. Yeah, Randy in PA said, man, Trump just got schooled. That is just it. Tracy, who came after him? Who's the poor soul that had to follow that?
I had to leave the room.
Oh, okay. But I mean, I can't imagine following that. And the president and Mr. Clinton. And you know, I feel sorry for Barack. Barack Obama knows he, you know. Tracy says no one worth mentioning. Well, how could anybody be? Does anybody remember who spoke before Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address? I mean,
there was another speaker.
Oh yeah, the guy before Lincoln went on for like 2.5 hours. And
really?
Yeah, and Lincoln, you know, wrote the Gettysburg Address on the back of an envelope on the train to from D.C. to Gettysburg. And upon returning home from Gettysburg, fell grievously ill for months. Nobody really knows exactly what the disease was because of the state of medicine in the day, but he was badly sick. But the tradition of the day. The tradition of the day was to stand up and orate for hours. That's where the term stem winder comes from. But Lincoln got up after 2 hours of haranguing from some other dignitary, spoke for about 2.5 minutes, and sat the hell down.
Didn't, there's a, I think it's Marfan's disease. Didn't Lincoln have Marfan's disease?
Yeah, they speculate. But the thing is, it's hard to tell because he had gut problems, and the cure that he took, or the remedy that he took for his gut problems, was something that was popular back in the day called Blue Mass. And the primary ingredient in Blue Mass was mercury. So imagine taking a couple of tablespoons of mercury every couple of days, and who knows what you had. Probably mercury toxicity. But by the way, Tracy says you were right. It was Mary Kay Cadillacs.
Good guess. My sister was a Mary Kay salesperson.
Well, the pastor's wife. The pastor's wife is apparently a Mary Kay rep, and she put out the call for the caddies. But I hope, you know, I hope that goes down in the. It really does deserve to. Actually, it's a funeral oration. Needs to go down in the annals of America of American speech making. Because that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is shocking, is surprising, not shocking, but surprising to us now, because we hear so little of it. And God knows when you hear it in comparison to a harangue from Trump in Talibandiana last night, for instance, there is no comparison.
No.
I mean, Michael Eric Dyson could teach Obama a thing or three.
Yeah, but I'm sure his oratory tomorrow at McCain's funeral will be something everybody will remember.
Oh, it, yeah, it'll be touching and it'll be memorable, but largely because nobody will be able to get anywhere near it. But speaking of what's going to go on tomorrow, can I just say at the Capitol Rotunda Memorial today, toward the end, up hobbled ancient demon from the bowels of hell, Henry Kissinger.
Oh my God.
And do you know that blood-sodden war criminal is going to speak at McCain's funeral tomorrow? Bill Clinton.
That's travesty.
Yeah, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, I don't know, maybe, no, not Bill. Barack Obama, George W. Bush, and Henry Kissinger. That's the bill.
I really liked John McCain because John McCain really liked my wars. There was no one I wanted to kill that John McCain did not also want to kill.
Kissinger has to take credit for getting the prisoners released. That's,
is that what it is?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'll never forget that day. Saw John McCain get on the Hanoi taxi and come home.
Well, at least that.
I was in Okinawa watching it in a day room because I worked swing shift.
Well, at least that provides something resembling a rational explanation. But he's still evil as shit. Fantasia the singer came after Tyson. That's the no one worth mentioning Tracy was talking about.
You know, Fantasia.
Do any of you think that Obama will take a shot at Trump tomorrow?
No. It'll be played straight down the middle.
It'll all be about McCain.
Oh, and by the way, I need to mention, and there again, very kind thanks and condolences going out to our buddy Matt in San Francisco on the loss of his brother-in-law, Glenn. Thank you, Charlene, for answering Matt's call. Thank you so very much. That's so very kind of you. Ron in Raleigh tells us, as far as Gettysburg was concerned, the first speaker at Gettysburg was Edward Everett, a popular orator of the time. I've heard that name. And yeah, he was good for a couple. Remember, the Lincoln-Douglas debates went on all damn near all day. None of this done in an hour bullshit with modern presidential debates. Most of the people who run for office today could not survive the campaign, a good old-fashioned 19th century campaign. Because it was grueling. Darlene in Connecticut with a note says, confused on that. I have to assume McCain asked Obama to give the eulogy at his funeral, and he committed well before Aretha's passing, but why didn't he send Michelle to Aretha's funeral just so there was a presence? I seem to recall that Aretha performed at Obama's well-attended inauguration. Yeah, probably because it would have been deemed a slight and white America would have had a sad, to be quite honest. Oh, and let's run over. Let's run over and check in. And the one thing I've not been able to check with the stress line, I know I can hear the stress line can hear me, and the stream can hear both of us. I don't know if the Skype group can hear. So let's see if that's the case. Come in, stress line. Okay, Well, I'm not hearing anything either. Maybe hold on. Maybe I lost the Bluetooth. Stand by. Yeah, I guess it dropped the Bluetooth connection. Let's see if we connect and get in there.
Tracy issued a retraction.
Tracy issued a retraction?
It wasn't Fantasia. It was Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, okay.
Now that makes all the difference in the world.
Okay.
I think she sang, too.
Okay, let's see if we're connected to the stress line yet. Go ahead.
Hey, Bob.
Ah, there you are. Oh, it's Scott. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, hey. This is a rare thing. I haven't been on the damn front porch in ages, so this is good. It seems to be working out because I just heard Sparky, but in the little interlude before you went to the stress line, I could hear you, but I couldn't hear. He would say something, then there'd be gaps. I wouldn't hear anything. So apparently, if people were speaking, I wasn't hearing that.
Before I connected you to the Bluetooth, you were hearing me through the mic on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But whatever, I wasn't hearing anybody else before we got it worked out. But you sound good, everybody. Somebody say something.
Can y'all hear over in the Skype group?
Yeah,
Scott. Yeah, I can hear.
He says say something. I'm saying something.
Hallelujah! It all works.
Yeah, now it was. I need somebody. I am not familiar with Aretha's version of the song "Never Grow Old." Is that the old Southern gospel? Well, let me put it this way. Well, back in my Bible thumping days, there was a Southern gospel quartet that used to sing the hell out of that song. And I love that song. That's one of the few religious things I carry forward into my current tap dance. Is like never grow old, never grow old. I can't sing.
I'm the only one that's allowed to sing badly around here. Watch it.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. Let's do a CD, Bob. Come on, we can do it. All we got to do is come up with a name of the.
I admit I'm not familiar with that hymn.
I'm not familiar with it either. Because I pretty much never grow old. Well, we'll never grow old. Aretha Franklin. Never grow old. Song by Aretha Franklin.
Well, if it's the one I'm thinking of, the Southern Gospel guy is Hovie, H-O-V-I-E, Lister, I believe his name was. And he sang the high parts in Southern Gospel. And he sang that song. I'll tell you where it was. It was on a Bill Gaither music special, and he sang that song a short time before he passed on, and I'll tell you, I had chills. So if Aretha gig. So if she gave it the Aretha treatment, then I'll probably rise up out of my seat without standing when I hear it.
Well, maybe we'll get some feedback from the horn community. Oh, you found it, Tracy?
Yeah.
Oh, that would have to be the same song.
Let's see. I'm trying. It's on YouTube, and I suck at these kind of things, so.
I didn't mean to get off into the weeds, but that song is a very moving song on its own. I can only imagine.
What's the song called?
Never Grow Old.
Let's see.
That song will make an atheist cry. No, I'm serious. I don't know who wrote it or how
old.
Oh,
I put it in, I think I did it. Look in the chat.
I'm not on.
No, he's not in. He's not in Skype.
He's not going to chat. Okay. I will send it to you because you're on Facebook, right, Scott?
Yeah, we're Facebook pals. Go ahead and send me the link. And I, of course, now I don't. Well, anyway, it's a lovely song.
Oh, okay. Just a clarification. Our buddy Keith says Scott is speaking about Hovey Lister and the Statesman Quartet.
Yeah.
Okay. I probably played that when I was a little pimply-faced gospel DJ a billion years ago, and have somehow managed to erase it from my memory banks.
Scott, did you get it?
I got to hear it on through the computer. So bear with me. They're playing an ad. Okay, let me turn it up.
What's that? What's that noise? Is it?
Yeah, I know. I don't. That's.
I think that's the new person that joined. Jason is making the background noise.
Sorry, I didn't. I reconnected and didn't mute. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. Hi, Jason.
Eating a sausage.
Yeah. Okay, by the way, thanks for the details there earlier. I appreciate it.
When you would talk about Dyson, between Dyson, Reverend Barber, Judge Mathis, and starting off with Reverend Al Sharpton, yeah, there's a lot of shade thrown toward the current Republican administration. But Dyson's was the best. And like you said earlier, Bob, those words he used were specifically to mess with the maggots.
Oh, it'll take them a while to figure out. It was like that old saying that the art of diplomacy is the ability to tell someone go to hell and make them feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of like that, only there wasn't anything diplomatic about it.
No. And even Stevie Wonder, because he basically closed out the service, and he said, you know, the whole thing about the maggots make America great again, and he said make love great again. So he got in his dig, too.
And they deserved them all.
Yep.
And I'm sure the rage machine will get amped up to 11.
They are going to lose their shit. And like I said, just when you get a chance, go on to the Twitter feed on the people were talking about putting up pictures of them looking up Liguri. I still can't pronounce it, whatever that word was.
Mm-hmm.
What's the hashtag for the Aretha's Aretha homecoming?
Aretha homecoming. Oh, listen to this one from the Palmer Report. Screws up on Canada trade deal. Paul Manafort associate cuts plea deal with Robert Mueller. Trump inauguration committee took Kremlin money. Michael Eric Dyson slams Trump at Aretha's home. Hashtag Aretha's homecoming. And it's still only 6 p.m.
That's good. Now, is it Aretha's or Aretha?
Aretha. No S.
Okay.
Aretha homecoming. Homegoing. Aretha. Hashtag Aretha homegoing.
Did she pass from cancer?
Yeah, she had pancreatic cancer. And because, like I think I said this the other day, how fiercely private she was. And there was all these speculations, especially once she lost a lot of weight. She had it for 7 years, which is amazing for anybody with pancreatic cancer. Because usually when people get pancreatic cancer, they're gone.
Yeah, two people, her and the notorious RBG.
RBG, oh.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah, she's whipped pancreatic cancer twice. She needs to be studied.
Yes, she does.
Yes. My mother passed from, she actually had dementia, but she passed from pancreatic cancer, which is really odd because nobody in my family ever had cancer. So in any case, I'm sorry that she's gone. 76 is young these days. So,
well, it's young unless you've lived in a place, and I mean, Detroit's a 76 is youngish unless you've lived in a place that is beset by ungodly amounts of environmental toxins. And Detroit is such a place. Also,
yep,
Flint.
As Judge Mathis pointed out, I hope somebody could find that too, because that's why I was surprised that Rick Snyder was at the funeral. Because after Rick Snyder spoke, and I was gagging the whole time, a while later, here comes Judge Mathis. And he called Rick Snyder out because he said, I'm on my way after I leave here to Flint, Michigan, because they have stopped giving out bottled water to people. And I talked to Aretha about this. And she's like, this something needs to be done. And so I was like, zing, bang, pow.
So I just composed a tweet. Y'all tell me if I should hit send.
Uh-oh.
Wow, at real Donald Trump, exclamation point. Michael Eric Dyson rolled you up and smoked you today at Aretha, at hashtag Aretha homegoing. You got burnt so bad your nasty old Klansman daddy got extra scorch marks down in hell.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's awesome. Cowbell.
Did you put at my, whatever Michael Eric Dyson's Twitter name is?
No, I didn't.
You need to, because I think he'd appreciate that.
Oh,
that's
nice.
A very good tweet. That's a very nice tweet. I'm surprised that there are so many rednecks in Michigan, but I guess there are, especially up in the upper north part of it.
Well, I don't know what I mean. I put in Michael Eric. I put in at Michael Eric Dyson, and nothing pops.
Let me see. Well, because I'm not on Twitter yet. It's because I know he has to have a. I mean, maybe he doesn't, but I can't believe that he doesn't have a Twitter account.
I missed Michael Eric Dyson when he came to Oakland. He came to Oakland promoting his book, but I just couldn't, get myself down there. But Chris Hedges is coming next month to Berkeley, and then in October, the people that do Project Censored. Bob, do you know about the Project Censored program?
Oh yeah.
They're promoting their new censored annual, and they'll be in Berkeley. I've got a class that night, but I'll try to get down there.
Oh, Bob, it's Michael E. Dyson.
Yeah, I just found
it.
Okay, so do we have consensus? Do I hit send on this?
Yes, please do.
Yes.
Okay, it's out. So now everybody has to go and retweet it.
Okay, I'm retweeting it now. And I haven't tweeted anything in there forever.
Bob, do you actually use... I don't know if I'm even on. There we go.
Yeah, you're on.
Bob, do you actually use the tweet?
Do you actually use Twitter? Yeah, I tweet quite a bit.
Yeah, because I don't tweet or do Facebook that often. I don't know how many people really care about what I have to say. So.
Well, what you can do, though, is you can help amplify other voices that you do want to be heard.
Okay. I have a big 42 up here. I don't know what that means. Anyway. My counselor was telling me that, because I'm feeling really out of sorts since Trump got elected, really, you know, out in space. She said there's a phenomenon that psychologists have identified called Trump trauma. It's a real syndrome, and people have it. So,
yeah, it's a form of sort of existential traumatic exhaustion. I could probably be diagnosed with it, just because the nature of what I do is such that I spend days, every day since January the 20th, 2017, and before it, actually, submerged in this vile and filthy swamp.
Yes.
So that you have to make conscious efforts to get away from it. In my case, weed eating, shoving the lawnmower around, going outside and fussing and fretting and worrying over the smoker and working up, you know, pork butts or racks of ribs or whatever, like I'm going to do this weekend.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I can't come visit you, but it'll be...
Do you like ribs, Larry?
Yeah, I like ribs. I don't eat them often, but I like them. Yes, I do.
Ooh. I'll work on that maybe if we ever get the plan together where Bob sends meat through the mail. Won't be any selling involved, but if we do Bob sends meat through the mail, I'll see to it you get a rack.
Bob?
Yes.
The way you described it a couple of weeks ago, your method.
And I'm wondering to ask Scott and you, because I've talked to Scott at great length about these kinds of things, but I've gotten existential in not in the pop culture sense, but in the real sense, how people who are religious deal with what the ultimate destiny of human beings are in the world, and whether or not, you know, if everything is supposedly on an equal footing, then, you know, how to... I'm sorry to get deep, but I'm just wondering.
We do deep here. It's okay.
But I'm just wondering how, when you're looking at life from an existential perspective, like, you know, what happens after, when death happens, or whether or not there's any meaning, or whether or not there's any real, hope in the world for you know, humans and for other animals, how religious people deal with that and how they come to grips with.
Well, I mean, if you approach any faith system, Larry, as a function of intellect, you've already lost the game. And existential approaches are, at least the way I was taught, distinctly intellectual. I don't mean like, ooh, you smarty pants. You know what I mean. That it's a product of intellect. Whereas religion is a product of emotion. Intellect is a product of knowledge. Religion is religion and emotion are products of belief. And so that's why I always get a chuckle out of people who try to logically prove the existence of God. It's kind of an insult that, you know, if God's real, it's kind of an insult to God to do that. Because by virtue of being God, God is beyond the conceptualization of human intellect. Because he, she, it is everything.
Larry, I've got an idea. Have you ever seen the Monty Python movie, Monty Python's The Meaning of Life?
Wait a minute. I just muted. You know, Duncan always reminds us to mute when we're not talking. I think I remember seeing, if I didn't see the whole thing, I've seen parts of it.
Well, definitely find it and sit down and watch the whole thing, because it addresses some of these deep issues. It really does. People look at that film and just think it's typical Python silliness and absurdity. But there's a lot of depth in that film between the frames or between the sprockets or something. And it's just the absurdity of life. But even more absurd than the absurdity of life is the absurdity of the attempts of people like me and religious folks and who knows who else to try to make it mean something. Because it's empty and meaningless, and it's empty and meaningless that it's empty and meaningless. I mean, if you can spend some quality time with that notion over a period of years, shit will begin to open up in ways that you would never anticipate and get your, not your thinking, but your experiential happenings in line with what's mm-hmm. so and what's not so.
Well, it's just that I never thought that we would get ourselves in this country to the point where the means that we use, we've always said democracy says that the means justify the end. Well, we've used the means, but we've gotten to the end, which doesn't, we've gotten to some end point which doesn't make any sense. And we've used a rational political system called democracy and the vote, but we've gotten to a place where we have an extreme administration that's doing all kinds of things that nobody ever thought that they would ever do. I mean, I don't even think that Barry Goldwater, if he were alive today, would look at this system and he would sit and scratch his head and say, how in the hell did we ever get here? That's not what I meant in 1964. Now, I haven't studied him, so I don't know what he actually said in 1964, but I think he evolved. So Bob and, you know, I don't know where, I mean, we're in some kind of social, cultural moment that I can't get, you know, that I just can't comprehend. That's all. I mean,
but that's the thing. That's the thing, Larry. You can't, at the risk of sounding, you can't overthink
hey,
it.
Bob,
you can't
Bob,
overthink it.
The,
yeah, go ahead.
Who is the writer that said, you? I think I've heard you say this quote a lot, and I've read a few of his books, and the name is escaping me right now, but when fascism comes to America, it'll become wrapped in a flag and carrying a Bible.
Oh, God. You know what? I can't keep, for some reason or another, I cannot for the life of me keep.
He foreshadowed this.
It's Upton
he foreshadowed this disaster. Yes, yes.
That was Will Rogers, I think. Was it Will Rogers?
Sinclair Lewis. Sinclair Lewis.
No,
Sinclair Lewis.
Sinclair
right.
Lewis,
was
yeah.
He foreshadowed this Trump disaster. I think
it's not Sinclair Lewis.
It's not. Who was it?
I'm scanning to find out.
Is it Dino or Sinclair dinosaur?
Lewis, didn't he? Sinclair Lewis, didn't he write it wouldn't happen here?
That's where that's from, isn't it?
It could be. I never read the book, but yeah.
He wrote Main Street, he wrote Babbitt.
Main Street was
his famous one.
Yeah, Main Street was also terrific. I did read that.
Apparently, it goes further back than most people think.
Oh.
And it got just based on the thumbnail quick search I did here. It's one of those things that gets ascribed to everybody. Sinclair Lewis gets it. Huey Long gets it. Whether there's several different sources that say there is no actual direct citation for it, that you can find it applied. In 1922, a partially matching statement printed in a North Carolina newspaper was applied to the Klan. For instance, Governor Allen has made a fine epigram on the KKK, race prejudice wrapped in the flag. A local UMWA district in Kentucky president, Lonnie Jackson, 1923, the Ku Klux Klan comes wrapped in the American flag, as it were, advocating the American principles openly with a Bible in its hand, and the next day they're pressing their neighbors, they're passing their neighbors with a mask over their faces. Then in 1935, it can't happen here, Sinclair Lewis. He was afraid that the world struggle today was not of communism against fascism, but of tolerance against the bigotry that was preached equally by communism and fascism. But he saw, too, that in America the struggle was befogged by the fact that the worst fascists were also they who disowned the word fascism and preached enslavement to capitalism under the style of constitutional and traditional Native American liberty. But there's no one person who can be credited with that phrase.
Bob, I wanted to ask you a question. In West Virginia, I've heard not only from Devin, but from other people, that in West Virginia, if you go to the doctor, they put limits on how much medicine or what kind of medicine or how much medicine that they're allowed to give a patient. Is that true, and why?
Certainly with regard to anything that could be deemed addictive or scheduled, I deal with rather profound intestinal issues, and generally speaking, I cannot, it doesn't matter what kind of pain I'm in, if I show it up at the emergency room, whatever, I cannot get oxycodone, hydrocodone, any of that stuff. I have no history of addiction. I have no history of abuse of any substances, but because I'm a hillbilly, I might get hooked. Or, what's worse, I might be faking my gallbladder attack and just trying to take my 24 hydrocodones down and sell them to the boys under the bridge.
Well, wait a minute. But like Tracy and Scott and everybody else in the room, when you need to have some kind of ask for any kind of oxycodone, but I don't think they have those kinds of restrictions where we are.
My most recent experience with what is
medication?
That
they were very careful. They were very careful with me, giving me. They normally they only try to give you, some kind of something non-addictive when you're in the emergency room, or at least I've always found that. I don't know, but
well, a couple of years ago I had a bad fall and messed up my knee, one knee and one foot, real bad. And had to go to the emergency room, and they gave me, one that a lot of people get easily addicted to, but it's not the most recent thing, the one that Rush Limbaugh got in trouble for. It's hydrocodone, is that it?
Yeah, it's like Vicodin, yeah. I think.
Vicodin, that's the one. And they gave me a moderate strength of Vicodin, I forget how many pills, but it was enough for the intended purpose.
and I think there was one refill, but after that, they were very stingy with it. And so, no, I here in California, plus I'm on Medicare, Medi-Cal, you know, so I did, I don't know how much I paid out of pocket, but it was a minuscule amount. So, no, we're not like, in so many ways, we're not like West Virginia at all in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean,
to get back
I,
to
I,
your... Go ahead, Tracy.
No, I was just agreeing. Like, I've never, I mean, some every so often, but since when I was younger, if I was in pain, I would have a problem because, you know, I'm a black drug addict. But now that I'm a middle-aged black woman, I don't need to get in. I actually have to turn down pills because they don't really help me at all, especially pain pills, really. So I've gotten Vicodin, hydrocodone. What else have I gotten? Morphine. Jan's looking at me like, what else? And, you know, since none of them really work on me, and I just tell them, forget it, because it doesn't help. And like you, Scott, I'm on Medi-Medi, so, you know, most of my pills are, I have no copay when I pick up my medication.
Well, and I can see where people would get hooked on Vicodin, because just in the limited exposure I had to it, it's wonderful stuff. I mean, you know,
I could not disagree with you more, Scott. I mean, I'm not saying people can't get hooked on it. I have never found any benefit. I mean, no, not benefit. I've never found any recreation in it. The only time I've ever taken it is when I'm having a gut problem, and the pain is so bad that all it allows me to do is function in a sort of stupor.
Well, I tend to think that they need to really rethink the problem there in West Virginia and elsewhere, the mindset that they have that it's all about recreation. I dare say that it's more about escape in moments in life of futility and angst that they're getting whacked out. You know, or if it starts as a recreational thing, I don't think it stays that way for long. It becomes an escape in the sense of...
Well, yeah, there's the escape thing, but if I may also, Scott, it moves quickly from that into simple addiction maintenance, because with any
exactly.
with any opioid, the one thing, you know, it becomes a matter of never wanting to get dope sick, because dope sick is a sojourn in hell.
That becomes the new thing to be treated.
Yeah, since I'm not, I use drugs, but I don't use recreational drugs. I use prescribed drugs for my situation. But I'd imagine, I don't know what having an overdose or going through withdrawal symptoms is all about. So I have no idea what dope sick means. But I'd imagine, like Scott is saying, that people are taking a lot of this medicine because there's no infrastructure, there's no work for them, there's no money for them, they are sitting.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a big part of it in a place like Appalachia, Larry. In conjunction with the fact that we have a lot, you know, what industry we have is heavy industry, and so people get their bodies broken on the rack. The guy who works on my car. Is, you know, he probably should not be working, but he refuses not to work because he has to, you know, he's got to work. Well, he was crushed. He was crushed in the mines. Okay. And he gets up and go and he I ain't going to take none of that dope because that'll ruin me. And so he lives in constant pain. And when I went over to see about getting the front end looked at again, couple of days ago, he's probably 15, maybe 20 years younger than me, and he was walking about bent double because his back was acting up, and that's just the reality here. And then because, you know, it's like the old thing where you've got a rat problem, so you bring in the mongoose. You got a rat problem, so you bring in the snakes to eat the rats. Then you got a snake problem, so you bring in mongooses to eat the snakes. And pretty soon you're up to your ass in mongooses. Okay. Yeah. Well, what has happened in the opioid epidemic, brought to you in part by Republican senatorial nominee, Attorney General of West Virginia, Patrick Morrissey. Hey, America, thank Patrick at the polls. Tell him to fuck off. What happened here is, in the 90s, there was this...
I wanted to say hi to Steve while I'm...
Oh, okay.
Steve came in.
What happened is, in the 1990s, there was a move toward being more serious about pain. And there was a recognition of how much harm pain in itself can do to you. So they started, especially people who were injured at work and whatever, they started giving them these scripts for pain pills. Then they got addicted. And then people started running around saying, oh, my God, we've got a pill problem. We've got an addiction problem. Because we did. And there was a healthy black market for it. And some states were easier to get than others. We had, you know, we had oxycodone carpools from West Virginia to Florida going to pain clinics down there. It became OxyContin became known almost overnight as hillbilly heroin.
But then, Larry, when they
tightened up on the availability of the pills, people looked around, and this was about the time that we were, you know, we'd done such a magnificent job of reinvigorating the heroin industry in Afghanistan that people looked around and said, well, I can't get no oxy. I guess I could try that there heroin. And so we wind up with a heroin epidemic. And then because capitalism, you don't want to just be sending out your heroin. I mean, you can stretch it. It's kind of like putting ground oat flour in hamburger. You can stretch it with some fentanyl. And the next thing you know, people are hillbillies are dropping like flies.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Bob, I don't get this Morrissey dude, because it seems like what he wants to do is just be a pusher for everybody. So he's this big pusher that wants to get everybody hooked on drugs, because after all, we're not going to provide food for them. We're not going to provide jobs for them. We're not going to provide them any kind of, we're not going to provide people any kind of livable existence. So the easiest way to deal with people is just to get them hooked, so they just die while they're addicted. I have a couple of questions. How is it that Rush Limbaugh, why did Rush Limbaugh need to take OxyContin number one?
My friend, I hurt my neck playing golf.
So his trip was all about just being hooked on the drug, I guess, then.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is, I don't know, remember Devin, I don't know what Devin's actual physical situation is, but my understanding is that he, I don't talk with them anymore because they don't want to talk with me. You know, Timmy and Devin and those people.
Well, let's leave those personality dynamics out of the conversation, Larry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. But,
let's
not talk. Just, let's not talk about people who aren't here to talk.
Okay.
Unless it's Trump, and we can call him a scum-sucking pig. But you know, that's Trump.
I'm not. But I, you know, I don't know what his physical situation actually is. But it just seems that there's a lot of people.
Lot of hurt people all over this country, and there's a lot of addicted people, and there's a lot of people who have been run through the ringer of a medical system that is incapable or unwilling to care for them. Yeah, you know, there aren't nearly enough beds in West Virginia to handle the number of people who want to get clean of various and sundry forms of opiates. And even if there were, there's not enough coverage to cover it. So, I mean, that's the reality of it. But some other people wanted to get into the conversation.
In a country where we, and I know you've heard the argument over and over, in a country where we spend so much money trying to maintain a military-industrial infrastructure, or actually there's no industrial infrastructure because it's pretty much gone to third world countries and fourth world countries, but where you have a military infrastructure and you have a situation where you have a few multinational capitalists who are making a ton of money, whereas the rest of the world is suffering, there's no reason for it. I guess you can't really look at it logically anymore, but it just seems that that's why that there are these problems.
Libertarians sure as hell try to justify it. That's the
what's
the,
that? I'm sorry.
Libertarians try to justify it intellectually, the state of the country, the state of the world, why the rich deserve to have all the riches they do. That's the whole point of libertarianism.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Scott.
I'm going to free up the stress line so somebody else can get in. But I wanted to leave one final quick note on this thing with the addiction. And actually, it's not an addiction problem. It's a poor choice of response problem to the existential quandary that many, 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 many people find themselves in. It all comes down, if you get to root cause, it all comes down to a form of upset. And there are three ways of reactions that people, three reasons, the three forms of upset, if you will. One has to do with thwarted intention. One has to do with unmet expectation. And the last has to do with undelivered communication. And listen for those three things on the playback later. Write them down and then contemplate them and see if they don't line up pretty well with the angst that a lot of us are feeling in response or reaction to the current state of things. Let me go over real quick. Thwarted intention, unmet expectation, and undelivered communication. And once those are appropriately addressed in a meaningful, transformational way, then you can see a lot of positive shit happen, I think. But anyway, I'm glad I was able to get in. It's good being with you guys on a Friday after so long. But I'm going to free up the stress line so somebody else can jump in.
Scott, before you go, would you get in touch with me? I'd like to exchange emails and talk with you. Okay?
Yeah. Are you on Facebook?
I'm on Facebook. I'm Larry Buckhalter.
I've got your email. That's right. I'll go ahead and drop your line, Larry.
Thank you, Scott. Good night.
Okay. You all take care. Have a good weekend. And remember, support labor. It is, after all, Labor Day.
Hear, hear. Well said. Well said, Scott. So let's move. Let's move around and give some other folks a chance to talk a little bit. And by the way, the stress line is open if you want to try it out. Area code 304-640-2829. 304-640-2829. Thanks to Scott for helping us find out just exactly how well it works. It's open if you want to try it out. Hey, Steve in New York, what's happening, man? Sometimes it takes a minute to unmute. Steve in New York? Steve? Okay, hung like Jesus. Are you there? Dadgummit, I'm seeing green dots. Steve, or hung like Jesus, are we reaching? Okay, Charlie, in Tennistan. Huh. Is anybody there? Oh, we're reconnecting. No, that's somebody else calling into the call. No, it doesn't work like that. If you want to get into the conversation, you've got to call on Skype. If you want on the Skype part of it, you got to you got to connect to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. If you want to get in via the phone, you got to dial 304-640-2829. That's how that works. 304-640-2829. Oh, wait a minute. I'm an idiot. I'm sorry. I muted the wrong thing. I can't be trusted with my own equipment. So let's go back. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
can
sorry,
you
man.
Now?
Yeah, I
don't.
The gizmo, well, it's labeled gizmo. It's the stress line. The gizmo button is right next to the Skype button, and I muted the gizmo. I muted the Skype instead of the gizmo.
Well, it's clear that you need to get a new flagellate.
Oh, my Knuten valve is so screwed.
No, I think I emailed you. I'm going to change my name.
Mohammed Sanchez, right?
Mohammed Sanchez. Yeah, I figure when I saw the stuff at the border where they're denying people who don't look right, Americans who don't look right, passports, I thought, you know, I need to, I need to fully embrace my oppressed brothers and sisters and put myself on the line. So I actually was looking into the process to change my name today. It's very simple in New York. It only costs $65.
Wait, you're really going to do that?
I'm thinking very strongly about it. Yeah.
That would be a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah, it might piss off my parents. Or, you know, and the other thing too is I was thinking how I would do it, because if I do it that way, it's public information, so people would be able to see what I was beforehand. I would prefer they not. Of course, you know, they see this white guy from Ohio and think, I doubt you grew up Mohammed Sanchez. So, but yeah, no, I'm really thinking of doing it.
It'd probably be some great PR for your practice.
Ooh. See, now all of a sudden I feel dirty for thinking about that.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Look, resistance and activism don't mean that you have to hide your light under a bushel.
Okay, fair enough.
And it would probably get noticed. Area man changes name to Mohammed Sanchez.
Yeah. I mean, I may choose a better last name because it's so, I don't want to say stereotypical, but it's so common. On the other hand, maybe that's the reason to do it, because it is common.
Yeah, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
You know, change it to Mohammed MS-13 Sanchez.
Oh, jeez.
You'll be on the do not fly list. You won't, don't go to the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll never go to Canada again, Steve. Just saying.
Well, I'll just drive. Well, and you know what? There's no fly list for Canadian airlines. So I fly a Canadian airline whenever I go there. I don't fly anything American. I don't think they have a no fly list up there. Maybe they do. I don't know. I seem so non-threatening.
Well, it's they've got one, Steve, but it's only for people who don't understand the rules of Canadian football.
So everyone's on it.
The entire United States.
Yeah, and most of Canada, probably.
You should see the no-fly list in Australia for the people who don't understand Australian rules football.
Australian rules football. Even
the Aussies can't get on.
No. By the way, I know it's a very, you know, pedestrian and lowbrow subject, but I wanted to ask you what you thought about the whole Ohio State thing.
Meyer. It is perfectly appropriate. Tonight actually begins the official college football season.
I thought Oklahoma State played last night.
Okay,
a bunch of teams that played.
Yeah, they did. Thursday night. I'm so upset. I'm so sot in my ways. You know, I don't think about Thursdays, but yeah, you know, I'm focused on tomorrow in Charlotte, North Carolina, with our big showdown with the Vols. The Ohio State thing just seems. Forgive me, Steve. I know you're a fan, but it strikes me as really, really nasty.
Yeah, you know, you're going to think I'm weird when I say this. Here's what I think. I frankly don't think he knew, and let me explain what I mean. And I think people intentionally keep him in. I think there's probably an unspoken rule that you don't tell him these things so that he has plausible deniability to say that he didn't know.
Right.
What happened in Ohio State?
The way I understand it is essentially is that one of the assistant coaches was involved in domestic violence.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's a provision in the contract, the employment contract, that they're supposed to report it. And here's the real weird thing. Here's the real weird thing. You know, his wife is a professor there.
Yeah.
She has the same contract. She has the same provision. There's no...
Yeah, isn't she a professor in the Department of Nursing or something?
I don't remember the woman's name. Talk to her. And I was wondering, why didn't something happen to her? Why wasn't she canned? Look, you know as well as I do, Bob, that as much as we like college football, we also acknowledge the reality.
Yeah, it's filthy.
It's filthy as hell. And you know as also well as I, when people ask me what I thought was going to happen, I said nothing. It's Urban frickin' Meyer. What are you kidding me?
Right, but I mean, didn't he get kind of? I mean, it everything I've read on it tends to indicate, Steve, that he was a little less than cozy with the truth.
Of course. That's not the issue. The issue is whether you're shocked at that. I'm not shocked at that. I mean, like you said, college football is. I mean, I think the only thing worse than college football is FIFA. World soccer thing.
Well, everybody's got a long way to go to match that level of corruption.
Yeah,
I mean, when you're so corrupt that you look up and go, yeah, sure, we'll have the World Cup in the middle of a goddamn 120 degree desert. Why not?
Yeah, and isn't it going to be in Dubai? Or
yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm kind of watching MSNBC, and apparently they're showing stuff about, you know, I don't really. About Trump and something about windmills killing birds. What is?
Oh God, please.
That's his big troll. Yeah, he says we can't go to wind energy because of the birds.
Because the windmills kill the birds. Because that's you know,
we got to keep killing hillbillies by digging up coal.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, that just makes
wind turbines, people. Wind turbines.
Thank you. I knew Sparky was.
He's saying windmills.
Well, but
they're not windmills. They're wind turbines.
We know that.
Just keep that in your head.
I know that. I'm just reading what they're saying.
Send a tweet to Trump on that, Sparky.
Don't get mad at me. I'm just saying.
I don't tweet.
He's saying windmills.
Do it for me.
Let me update you on that. Let me just give you a sense of what the community can do when it sets out to do it. Now, we did it real time. I read you what the tweet was going to be. And y'all jumped out and started doing stuff. In the time that tweet has been live, because of y'all, and this is kind of a little hint toward how we can grow the horn. If y'all will, like, share Facebook posts that I put up and retweet stuff that I tweet, and this is so sad and so pitiful. But if you do that, that spreads the word. And so y'all have created 3,531 impressions since I sent that tweet.
That's awesome.
Are you serious?
That's awesome.
That's the power of retweeting and liking. Retweeting is better than liking. Liking is okay. Over on Facebook, liking is good. Sharing is better. And all of a sudden, you got oodles of people seeing it. So if everybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation got on Twitter, which is a sewer, let's understand.
I'm not going there, Bob.
Never be afraid to use the block button. I block maggots like I go through the weeds with my weed eater. But if you retweet this stuff, more people find out about the Horn and we grow the community. So
I got banned from Twitter for a while.
I don't think I ever have, but you know, whatever.
Well, I mean, the profile I think is still out there, but I don't go on it anymore.
Yeah. I know you walked away from it for a little bit. Hey, we're running short on time, and I want to get everybody into the conversation. Alexander's with us over on the stress line. Hey, Alexander.
Hey, Brother Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you? Thanks for all the lovely comments over there on my messaging on Skype.
Hey, it's all love, Brother Kincaid. I mean, I respect and I appreciate, you know, your platform. I've been following your show for years, and I'm just glad that I finally took the opportunity to finally get a chance to speak with you. You know, it's hard to find real men like yourself that are not afraid to speak truth to power and about things in life in general. I appreciate that. And that's one of the issues that I have with the state of humanity today. We don't have enough real men and women around that are willing to speak the reality of what we're dealing with.
Well, I appreciate that more than you can know. Those are powerful words, Alexander, and I really, really do.
Thank you.
What made you decide to ring in this evening?
Oh, just listening to the thing about, you know, when you guys were discussing the opioid problem and, you know, the whole thing with the war on drugs. And I just sit back and I thought to myself, okay, well, every time I see stories in the mainstream, the war on drugs is typically against people of color, specifically black and brown people. But now you have situations where you have white folks that can abuse drugs like Xanax and opioids. And, you know, it seems to me that the mainstream media is particularly sympathetic to them in the things that they do to cope with the daily stresses of life. But when it comes to non-white folks, they're not so sympathetic and understanding. You know, they want to be quick to say, lock them up. I have a problem with that because, like you were saying earlier, we all go through our stresses and challenges of everyday living. I'm no exception. I'm dealing with medical issues and financial issues and a gamut of things. And, you know, I think that's probably what makes me even more sensitive to the plight of other people and what other people endure in their everyday existence because of what I'm dealing with. But it just seems to me, unfortunately, we live in a country that until we are down and out or we feel like, you know, nobody cares about us, then we're sympathetic to what average everyday people are going through. But when we're riding high on a hog and life is good, we can care less about, you know, the challenges and difficulties of other people. And I kind of am reminded of that with this situation that I'm dealing with Spectrum Charter, telling them that I need my internet service to be able to communicate and take care of my daily affairs to keep myself going. And it seems to me that they don't understand that. They keep pressing the issue that the internet is a luxury, but at the same time, they're going to confirm what I said about everything being online. And I take the position that, well, if you're going to say that everything is online, that would confirm to me that that's a necessity, not a luxury, because you can't do anything without internet.
Well, there's absolute truth in that, and frankly, you know, part of that is embodied in the fight for net neutrality, Alexander, and the other part of that,
exactly. Yes,
I think, you know, the telephone company and the power company are regulated by various state public service commissions. Why in a wired world, where you can't even in most instances, I mean, if I wanted to go up and apply for a job at the Rippy Mart, I say, hey, can I have an application? They go, no, you got to go online, dude.
Exactly, that's my point. Yes, sir.
And everybody can't run to the library. And if you got to run, if you got to run to the library every other day to check your email to see if you've gotten a response. Well, you're not doing anything else.
Exactly, and they only allow you for what, 1 or 2 hours per day if you happen to get on the computers at all. I had that experience when I didn't have access, you know. And I don't have my own means of transportation. I'm in Silmar, California. I'm in an assisted living facility.
and I'm still trying to get familiar with the area, but I'm not aware of any immediate libraries where I'm physically located.
Yeah, and see, I mean, even things like pay-as-you-go cell phone plans.
Yeah.
Let's see, I think the cheapest one AT&T offers is $35 a month, and you get one miserable gig of data.
Exactly.
You can blow through a gig in a minute. And the thing is, that gig of data may cost AT&T 50 cents.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And they'll sell it to you for 15 or 20 bucks a gig. That's what regulation was meant to address. Well, Alexander, I'm awfully glad you called in, and because of the way things have worked out, we're running short of time, and I do want to hear from other folks. Hung Like Jesus is with us this evening, I think. You still there, Hung?
Yes, I'm here.
Go, man.
I'll put you later, brother Bob.
All right.
We
were talking about pain just a little while ago, and I had a unique perspective on pain. I was born with double hernias and didn't realize it until I was 16 or 17 years old. So I lived with extreme pain for 16, 17 years, and it had become such a part of my life that I was told that it rewired my brain, and it probably caused my severe depression that I continuously battle right now. And, you know, it was just, the pain had become such a part of my life till it was just, you know, I just expected it, and it was...
Yeah, I worked for a few years in the workers' compensation system in West Virginia, and I learned a lot about pain. And you know, by virtue of reading psychiatric and psychological reports, I learned how it will rewire your brain and it will rearrange your life.
Yes. It was some mornings that I couldn't even get up, but I was so used to it till it was just lay here for a minute. And then, you know, it'll go away. Then you'll be able to function. And I lived like that. And it was so common. It was just, you know, it was just something you just dealt with. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even dealing with anything. It was just like, it was like being nearsighted, I guess. It was just, you know, it was just a part of me. And then I realized that we got it fixed. And, life had opened up for me. It was like a brand new day.
Yeah. You almost don't, when you don't have pain, it's almost like you don't know how to deal with it.
But that's all I wanted to add.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Did I just see that our buddy John Bridivo wandered in?
Decided to sit down. I'm sorry I'm late, fellas.
That's cool. You've had a busy Beto week.
We have indeed. It's been a very busy week. I was late getting my show up today, as a matter of fact. Nothing went right today for me, Bob. Not a thing. I'm hoping this goes well.
You know, John,
Travis, Travis get it handled?
I'm sorry?
Did Travis get it handled?
Yes, he did. He spliced it together, added a few, switched the camera view around a little bit. And I stumbled on my show today, Bob. I just was not happy. Just, you know, you're not there all the way.
No, I believe me, I know the feeling. There are evenings I close the mic here and I just go in the curl up in the corner in a fetal ball and suck my thumb.
I mean to tell you.
Yeah, but it sounds like in the personal mythology of our family here. You know, my dad worked on a silicon furnace for damn near 40 years, maybe more than. And they had these great big humongous solid carbon with threads in the middle. Electrodes that the metal electrode post would thread down into, and then it would be lowered into the furnace.
Right.
And every now and then, when they went to raise one of those things up, the electrode would have burned up, and part of it would break off in the furnace. And then you had to shut the whole damn thing down, dig the whole damn thing out, and pull that broken piece of the electrode, which was called a stub, out of the mix.
Right.
And that was the most hellish, brutal, nasty work that my father said he ever had to be involved in. And those were the days when he came home and was just flustered, and flabbergasted and just pissed off beyond all expression. And so to have a really rotten day here in our house, the shorthand for that, John, is you broke off a stub. So John, apparently today you broke off a stub, brother.
I broke the stud off. Couldn't find anything to dig it out of there. I mean, you know, yeah, it went all right. I guess, you know, the show, you know, like they say, the show must go on. So I continued on. I just had to chop it up a few times. My donkey was baying at me all the whole time. And, you know, it was just like, had to get shit done and nothing wanted to happen. But it's Friday, baby. And you got to make it work. So we got into the weekend here, and we'll be fine. You know,
and it's the best we can hope for. But I got a couple of questions for you. One, based on Julius Geezer's tweet this morning, what is the largest stadium in Texas?
I want to see him fill up the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. I really do.
I figured it would have to be the Taj Mahjerri.
He'd have to be pulling people out of Michigan to fill that thing up with his sport down here. I'm telling you. I don't know. You know, I seen his little tweet there. And have you noticed that it doesn't matter what area he's going to or who he is supporting? The other guy, you could probably just, you know, leave a blank space there on a template on his little Twitter feed there, you know, because none of them, you know, they're weak on crime. Weak on the border, weak on the Second Amendment. You know, that's the way he describes everybody that's not him. And, I hope he's, you know, he ain't going to get the Dallas Cowboys Stadium because that it would just make him look ridiculous not fill that thing up because it would be obvious.
Yeah, but can you imagine being the aide who has to look at him and say, sir, there ain't a snowball's chance in El Paso that you're going to fill that fucking stadium,
I'm
sir.
I'm telling you, he prefers to pick smaller cities. All right, he's still going to go to a city, but it's going to be a smaller city. It's not going to be a major city in that state because
Amarillo, Lubbock.
Yeah. Oh well, he might be. I don't know Lubbock. You know, I don't know how red they are up there. I'd have to look, but I know Dallas, Fort Worth is blue. I know Austin is blue. Houston's blue. Corpus is blue.
Waco.
El Paso's blue.
Waco.
I don't know.
School's in session, so we'd have a ready supply of good little Baptists going there to Baylor.
Yes.
Where Jesus recently got a new football stadium. Yep. Hey, maybe they could have it at the football stadium at Baylor.
Hey, there you go. There you go. I don't know. I hope he gets close enough. I could probably make a little trip to be one of them protesters outside just so I could hold up a sign and let them know I was there, Bob, you know.
Fire up the Facebook Live and do the show from there, yeah. John.
I need to get one of those plans that's got the data on it, I guess. All the
Well, I tell you what, and I'll take it a step further. If you want to come in via a cell phone, we'll give you the good offices of the Horn to broadcast from.
Oh, I'll tell you. I'd really like to get to some of these things when he's here because it's just my nature. You know, you remember that guy Dick Cheney, I guess, visited Mississippi, I think, after the hurricane down there.
Yeah.
And that old boy walked by and gave that little comment.
Yeah.
That would be me. I'd like to get within earshot of that microphone. Just so I can.
You suck. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean to tell you, I don't think mine would be that clean. I tried to. I would attempt to keep it clean. But, you know.
Well, sometimes we attempt and fail, John.
Yeah, we fail. We fail. I fail often when I get frustrated and angry and I want to let you. I refer to my sailor.
Say what?
Give him this goalie treatment.
Yeah, you dick.
Yep, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, but then you'd have to have extra words because you'd have to say, you know, you lugubrious tiny dick, you know.
Oh, you have a much more refined vocabulary.
Well,
vocabulary.
I'm only using my new Michael Eric Dyson words. You were probably busy. You have got to go on YouTube, John, and you have got to watch Michael Eric Dyson's funeral oration at Aretha's funeral today.
Woo. Oh, was that? Yeah, I saw a part of it. I saw a part of it.
Those little hairs will stand up on the back of your neck.
I loved it. I loved it. What a tribute. And what great music would be played. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, but that was the most epic takedown of Donald Trump ever delivered. I mean, it was deliberate.
Oh, no, I missed that. When I came in, yeah, because I saw a lot of singing and whatnot, but when I came in, Mama told me, you missed a good one. I said, oh, yeah, he raked him over. Who was that?
Well, I mean, Michael Eric Dyson.
Dyson
took him to the woodshed, and we ran it here early at the beginning of the front porch.
Well, I'm sorry I missed it. I want to listen to it. I want to, you know.
Well, I tell you what, whoever down that way is trolling the living bejesus out of the Texas GOP and booger eating Rafael Ito, I want to be their friend. My God, that was some brilliant trolling this week.
What do they do? What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, first, you know, they put out the Texas GOP tweeted out that picture of Beto from when he was in the band. And
yes,
they said,
yes. And
yeah, can't debate because he's got a gig. And yeah, somebody immediately tweeted back and said, dude, you guys are so bad at this. Here's a picture of Beto playing on stage with, you know, Willie Nelson.
There you go.
I mean, is it safe to say that Willie Nelson is the most beloved and admired Texan in that entire giant state?
Yes. Yes, that's a safe bet. The man's like a saint. You know, when he passes, you think there's going to be, whew, it's going to be big. Yes, that man is huge. And, you know, because look at the life he's lived. You know, he's been through the ringer several times. What was that? Tied up in the sheets and beat. You know, it wasn't all roses for him. He fought his way where he is.
Right. And so then they kept it up. The Texas GOP didn't know the first law of holes, and they were in one. They kept on digging.
And I was talking
about this graphic I saw earlier. It was a collage. Beto, and it showed a picture of Beto O'Rourke on a skateboard. Man, I got taken down for that. I thought it was roller skates. He's on a skateboard. Beto O'Rourke has visited every county in Texas, campaign run without PAC money, was in a band with Cedric Bixler Zavala from At the Drive-In, the Mars Volta, played guitar with Willie Nelson, skated outside of Whataburger. And then there's a picture of Rafael Ito pointing at a gun in the Senate. Ted Cruz eats boogers, is the Zodiac Killer.
Yep, he is the Zodiac Killer. Looks just like him. See that poster? That's Ted. I always call him a used car salesman. That guy just sleazy.
Well, he's a refugee from a wax museum. That dude, just creepy. Yeah.
He's creepy looking. I just get so beside myself with this help from Donnie that Donnie's going to come down here and hold a rally for him. It just, every time he does something for Donnie, or ask Donnie for something like that, it just, you know, you get that twinge in the back of your neck. You dog, are you shitting me? You sucked up. I mean, you went after him, you know.
Well, the fact that Rafael
called him every name in the book.
Rafael Ito has no moral center for all of his Christianity. He shit all over his wife, and Rafael Ito said, "Well, you want to do it some more, Don?" And
yeah,
then
you want to do it some more here? Let me lick that off. He can do it again.
Yeah.
You know, that's Rafael. That's what he's done. And besides just being an all-out jerk, ain't nobody up there in Washington likes him anyway. Nobody does, right or left. I think they took a poll
and you know, when they did, like, yeah, when they debate, you know, maybe it's going low, but it would be nice to have Beto look at him and say, dude, you're sucking up to Donald Trump, and he trashed your wife and your father. What's wrong with you?
You know, you would think that would be, but I got into a discussion earlier today with somebody about the way Beto's doing his thing. Beto, if you watch what he's doing, he's not talking about Trump. He's not bad-mouthing anybody. He's not saying, oh, look at this guy. He's a terrible guy. Look at Ted Cruz. We all see what Ted Cruz is. But Beto's not out there going, look at Ted Cruz. Beto's out there saying, look at me and what I have to say. And that's how come he's going to stomp his butt into the dirt.
That's,
you know, they're matched
brilliant.
The polls now.
Yeah.
It is.
They're
it is.
Yeah, they're it's a dead heat now.
That's it.
And
for a state that is supposed to be a gimme,
The trick is to overcome the goddamn voter suppression, John.
That's it. We have to put, and like I said,
you get those blue cities out on Moss. You get everybody going. You get
people out to vote. We win.
Well, and the thing is, if you can get that momentum and sustain that momentum, Texas becomes a blue state.
Yes. Yes.
In modern terms, to compare to something ancient, that's Gettysburg for the Republican Party. You turn Texas blue, that's their Gettysburg. They're done. Yep. They got to march back.
It's over. And wait, there's more. Georgia. Look at Stacey Abrams gets in there. Baby, that's just, you know, take that state, turn it blue. We could do this.
How scared are they in Florida that Ron DeSantis has to play the race card before he's even been the nominee for 24 hours?
Ain't that disgusting? You know, he's a very articulate fellow. No shit! You reckon he made mayor because he was articulate, maybe? You just want to slap him in the face with a piece of bloody liver, I swear. It's ridiculous. He knew what he was saying when he said that stuff. We don't want to monkey it up down here. Are you shitting
me?
Do you know what year this is?
Yeah, like I said last night, after I talked about that whole thing on Wednesday, I actually went back and listened to that soundbite over and over and over again because, you know, it used to be I used to be in the business of cutting soundbites for radio newscasts.
Wow.
And I heard him. He punches the word monkey. If he says it's about socialism, why doesn't he say, you know, we can't monkey this thing up and go back to socialism? He doesn't. He says, he hits monkey. Everybody with a half a brain.
Everyone of them waving that rebel flag out there. Ha! There's that dog whistle. Their ears picked right up. Yeah. That's my man. That's him. And this is 2018. With everything that we've gone through in this country, with the flag controversies, the statue controversies, Donald Trump's mouth, all that crap, and you still say something like that? You're a disgusting idiot. Get out of here. We don't want you in our politics. We don't want you in our society talking that shit. That's the person that we're trying to defeat. That's the persona of Donald Trump all over the place that we need to get rid of in this country. To shame itself out of existence if we have to. You know, it's disgusting, huh? You know, and
we can have a conversation about where this country goes, but yeah. I'm pretty committed to the idea that we cannot have that conversation with the Klan. We can't have it with the Nazis. We can't have it with the alt-right. They do not deserve to be in that conversation, period.
No, what are they even doing in the room? I don't want them in the room.
Yeah.
Take that antiquated shit out the door. You know what? Those in this country or anywhere in the world, to get that through their head, you know, they haven't put their life on the line and had their life depend on somebody who's a different color. Oh, well, now that would be different, you know. Because I was talking to somebody the other day. I hate to get on with somebody who attacks me who's a veteran. And because I believe every veteran, you know, they walk their own, their path, their shoes, their life, what they went through. But if you don't think we have racists in the military, oh, shit, buddy, let me tell you, they're all over the place. They're in the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Coast Guard. It doesn't matter where they are. It reflects society. They're in society. So they're going to be in your military, too. You know, and that makes for a difficult argument. Not that I won't have it, baby. I will. You know, I just don't.
Well, sometimes you have to have hard conversations.
Yes. Yes, you do. You know, this guy was a Navy veteran. He's on me on Twitter back and forth, calling me every name in the book. And they started using this establishment. Well, y'all part of the establishment. Are you shitting me? Are we going back to the 60s? What are you going to put it to the man next time?
And, hey, John, I've seen your picture. If your establishment, the establishment's got problems. I love you, man.
It's got problems, baby. They got big problems. If I'm the establishment,
yeah,
because
you know I'm a neoliberal establishment shill myself.
I like to call myself a libtard snowflake. Come
hey,
on
John.
Over.
Hey,
yes,
John.
Sir.
Did you have to go through race and relations classes in the Navy?
I'm sorry. Say that again, because something.
Race relation classes.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well,
I never forget it. Yes. The Air Force.
It was after Zumwalt came in. So it was a little bit later. When I first went in, they didn't have it. Company. You know, so we were very well integrated. But I don't remember having the class until Zumwalt came in. Uncle Zumi came in, changed everything. Was all going to hug everybody, and things did get better over time. It took time, you know.
I had to go through them in Thailand because
is that right?
And hadn't gone through it before.
Well, I wouldn't. You know, when I first went in the Navy, we were training Iranians, you know, at the base out in California, so.
Hey, you know, we had Iranians at the base where I went tech school at.
Yeah, yeah.
I served them dinner at the chow hall. That was one of my first.
Oh Lord. You had chow duty?
Yeah, when I first got to tech school, I did.
Yeah.
Instead of being in the 1,000-man chow hall, I had to go to the officers' chow hall and then the foreign Air Force. Chow hall.
I remember, you know, we called it service week. Everybody had to go through service week, and they you know, most of that meant chow hall. You know, y'all are going to work at the chow hall this week. Go over here. Now, I got lucky and got picked for security, and a young sailor out, and they put me out on the gate where you have to wave people through. You know, like pretty girls and stuff like that. You know, I'm 18 years old. You put me on the gate. We're marching around with guys forever here. A pretty girl come by and smile, I'd be tickled to death. But yeah, I got out of chow duty and put on security. I look mean, I guess, you know.
In basic training, we had my flight had food poisoning, so we had our detail was to go clean M16s, the rifle range.
Oh Lord, yeah, fun. We were the last ones, and my company was the last ones to carry rifles. The company coming in behind us did not have to carry rifles. Did not have to qualify anymore. And boy, how the shit were we pissed. It's like, what's up with that shit?
I had supposed to qualify before I went to Thailand, but guy told me, just shoot.
There you go.
Because if you qualify, you might have to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll guard duty on the perimeter of the base. I'm like, no thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey guys, John, I'm sorry you didn't get into a little bit later, but as always, I enjoy the chance to chat with you. I think it's only going to get more exciting and more fun as we move toward election day for Beto. It's just going to get better. It's going to get Beto and Beto and Beto.
Yeah, all the way up November, all the way across this country.
Oh, hey, you got any musician buddies? I mean, Beto is, but you know, there's that. You know that Beatles tune? It's getting better all the time.
I'm sorry, say.
You know that old
it's
Beatles
getting better
tune?
All the time.
Yeah, it's getting.
Oh yeah.
It's getting Beto all the time. Beto, Beto, all the time. Yeah.
There
somebody
you
needs
go.
To do that. I'm telling you, somebody down.
Do that, Jake. I'm going to bring that up to my son. He dabbles in music.
It's getting it's getting Beto all the time.
I'm telling you, I can't. That out of this whole race, every time I listen to that man, every time I get involved with him, my spirits go up.
Oh, I'm so damn jealous. I can't stand myself. I can't imagine what it would be like to have a Senate candidate like him that you can get excited about. I have to talk myself into voting for Joe Manchin, you know.
Yeah, I got to go this weekend. I'm going to go Sunday. I'm going to go try to have some barbacoa with Lupe Valdez. She's the one running for governor here in the state. And she's going to be in Corpus Christi. Yep. and they're having a big red in barbacoa. That's South Texas, baby. What can you say? Meet and greet down there. So I'm going to try to get the camera and go down there with the microphone and see if I can.
You know what? If I was a Republican, that'd change me to Democrat.
I'm telling you.
Just for the
food.
You
can't beat the food they put on there. Good barbacoa. And you know they're going to have some there. You know they're going to be cooking that all night.
Oh, and, Yeah. See, and by the way, a very happy Labor Day to you, John, and to everybody in the whole Horn Family Community Congregation. Remember why we have Labor Day. Unions. Plain and simple. That's why we have weekends.
EW forever.
That's why we have weekends. That's why we have a 40-hour work week or something approaching it for those who can get it these days.
Today
was pension payday.
Pension payday, huh? Them bums, I don't get paid till the 1st, and, well, they're closed on the 1st. We'll have to wait until Monday. Well, wait, Monday's closed, so we'll have to wait till Tuesday. Bums.
But thank you, John, for dropping by, and thanks to everybody. Thanks to everybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thanks to all of you who came by to engage in the chat. I'm sorry we didn't hear from you, Charlie. I'm sorry about my button problems. Thank you to Irwin. Thank you very kindly to Jason. Thanks to John Britovo, Blue Dot Nation. Thank you to Larry. Thanks very kindly for stopping by. Steve from New York. Hope you're feeling better. Steve from Georgistan. Thank you very kindly for the play-by-play and for turning us on to the Michael Eric Dyson oration, Tracy. Thank you one and all to the everybody who helps keep the horn on the air. And again, thank you and condolences go out to our dear friend Matt in San Francisco, and warmest remembrances of both his sister, who passed away a few months back, and to his brother-in-law, her husband, who just passed away from COPD. Thank you very much, Matt, and sincere and warmest condolences to you and your friends and family. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, for moderating these many years, the Friday on the Front Porch discussion group. Thank you very kindly to Sparky for moderating in the chat room. Thanks to our pinch-hit utility midweek chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, as he continues to mend. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you. Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks to our subscribers who have brought you a fundraising free week of Horn broadcasts. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Charlene for jumping in alongside Matt in San Francisco. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everybody. I'll be back on Monday. We'll have a Labor Day program. Later, y'all.